It's time for Twig this week in Google. Ann Pruitt's here. Jeff Jarvis is here. Kathy Gellis is here. Coming up, lots to talk about. Google gets a big victory in court. We'll talk about the controversy raging over how Google modifies search terms before it looks things up. We're not sure exactly what it's doing. Then we'll talk about changes to Twitter that Elon Musk is making that are causing the rise of disinformation. But should he have to listen to the EU about that? It's all coming up next. Oh, yeah, Governor Newsom saved Skittles on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 737, recorded Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. Gormless. This Week in Google is brought to you by Vanta. Automate compliance and streamline security reviews with a leading trust management platform. Vanta helps SaaS businesses of all sizes manage risk and prove security in real time. Twit listeners get $1,000 off Vanta. Go to vanta.com/twig to claim this discount. And by Mylio. Mylio Photos is a smart and powerful system that lets you easily organize, edit, and manage years of important documents, photos, and videos in an offline library hosted on any device, and it's free. Don't wait. Visit mylio.com/twit. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Twig this week in Google, the show where we do everything but talk about Google. Actually, we have a lot to talk about with Google this week.
Oh boy.
That's Ann Pruitt sitting to my left. Hello, Mr. Pruitt.
Hello, sir. How you be?
I am very well. How's the push-ups?
I saw
how many in?
I saw Lily was watching you with some push-ups.
You saw me do push-ups earlier?
Yeah, I'm impressed.
I was doing my I told Lily, the dog, Lily, I said, I'm Aunt Pruitt, okay?
And she immediately ran away.
Yeah, she thought, that's not him. That's a terrible push-up. Jeff Jarvis is also here. He is the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City of Houston.
Now we're better. Okay.
Gotta get those cues. Man, that chorus. No overtime for you, kids. Go home. We won't be needing you at the end of the show.
This is the 737th time we've done this.
I know. Is it really? 737. Episode 737.
We're flying in.
We are also thrilled to get Kathy Gellis back in the house.
Woo!
Kathy, who was here last time you were here, you talked about the big Google case had just gotten started. It is ongoing, and there's more to talk about with regard to that case. So we'll get you to work. But Kathy is an attorney at law, cgcounsel.com. She can actually sit in the Supreme Court. She's allowed in.
Nice.
Admitted.
She's privileged.
Not on it.
But she's not on it, but she's admitted to the Supreme Court.
That day
does that
come.
Mean you could act as a solicitor at the and do it, run a case?
I'm admitted to the bar, yeah. I mean, when I file my amicus briefs, I get to file amicus briefs because I am a member of the bar who gets to. So one of the other perks is you go on a different line to get access to different seats if you want to actually hear a case.
Neat.
Man.
Yep.
Neat. Did you get a certificate?
Something suitable for framing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it framed, and I don't know. I mean, you tend to get a certificate from every court of appeals that you're administered to.
Lawyers like to put that stuff up, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the only ones that are really significant are like your schools. But yeah, they get most of the courts, if not all of them, give you a certificate. But they're all different sizes and this and the other thing. But it's just kind of, not everyone has one. I actually like the moment that when I got in to hear the cases, they give you a little admission ticket. Like there's a process for how you go in. You go in one door. They clear you, they give you, and then you move on to another stage. And one of the stages is they give you a ticket. And that is like the thing that's the most special to me because you look down and it's a ticket that identifies that you're a member of the Supreme Court bar. And it was like, ooh, you know, I'm not really, I think I tweeted once, I'm not a velvet rope type person, but that one was really cool. Like me, I get to do that. And, you know, obviously everybody else in the room too, but,
and you don't.
Yes. Like it is, I am part of the elite, but, it's neat, but then they take the ticket. So you don't actually get to keep it. Yeah. They give you the ticket so you can give another guy the ticket and you don't get to keep the ticket.
I'd like to frame that.
I took a picture before I had to lock up the cameras, so that's as good as I could get.
There is a bit of a
certificate last night.
What'd you get a certificate to?
About that?
Yeah.
So I did an event at the school about the Gutenberg part. This is Jay Rosen and I had a conversation, and he was very, very nice. He said that if this was... I said I was nervous. I felt like I was defending my dissertation. And he said, well, it would pass. And he wrote. He had written out a certificate that said, Jeff's PhD.
Put that on the wall.
I'm going to be suitable for framing. Yes.
I had a doctor who had all of her various diplomas and certificates on the wall, but they all had different names. I thought that maybe was a red flag.
She wore a lot of marriages.
That's what she said. It was, that's exactly what she said. all right. Let's talk about the trial. It is ongoing, DOJ versus Google. I haven't really kept up on it that much, but there was a little kerfuffle. Megan Gray was sitting in on the trial. She's a former FTC, former executive at DuckDuckGo, wrote an opinion piece on Wire based on a slide she saw. She saw the slide and interpreted it.
Oh, boy.
That Google was using something they call semantic search. And I think Google, we know Google does this. They modify. So you'll type in, you know, baby shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, what you type in, Google will enhance to make the search better. If you type, Corey uses this example, I think Megan did too, WEDS, WDS, they'll add Wednesday behind the scenes.
Right.
So that the search includes Wednesday because they figure that's what you really mean.
Right.
And, you know, they fix typos, things like that. But that happens behind the scenes. You never see that in either your search query or the results. Ms. Gray asserted, based on this slide she saw, that Google was so concerned about ad revenues that at one point they decided to start adding brand names.
Whoops.
To the search. So you would search for baby shoes, and they would add the name of a company that was an advertiser to that without your knowledge so that you would see their ads because they were in the query, their results.
Well, ads and, or actual
Well, ads and queries and results. And there's even more money in it for Google because a lot of like other competitors might bid on that search.
On that positioning, right?
Saying, hey, we want an ad there. Whenever you see Ostroff's baby shoes, we want to make sure you see Boingo's baby shoes. And so you double dip. And so I think this part of the problem was Megan Gray assumed what Google was doing this, you know, and when she worked at the FTC.
But I can see some justification. If you put in facial tissues, it should say Kleenex because most of the things you're actually looking for are written about as Kleenex.
Oh, you should be working at Google there, Jeff. Good job.
Boy. I'll take the job.
Nice.
I just saw a job listing for North American Head of News Partnerships. I can do that job, right? Salary up to $490,000.
So the plot thickens.
Okay, I'll do it.
On October 2nd, Wired pulled down Megan Gray's op-ed piece, saying it did not meet their editorial standards without further information. Well, that's the question in my mind.
There is.
There was a tweet from our friend Danny Sullivan, who, as you know, is now
formerly of search engine land.
Search liaison at Google. Let me pull up the... Mike Masnick calls it X-Twitter. Which I think is a good name.
I like that. That's That's the perfect name.
Let me call it the X Twitter, and I will pull up Google's search liaison's account so that you can see Danny Sullivan's fairly lengthy denial. And I call it that because he doesn't mention anything. The name, he just says there was an op-ed piece. Let me see if I can. Oh, he's very active.
Does he tweet that much?
Apparently.
No, maybe
I've gone back too far. Yeah, I've gone back too far.
Does does the Twitter, does the search at Twitter still work?
Yeah, no, you can do it. I just went to his search.
I just went to his name.
Op-ed. And
Okay. You're doing manually.
Here it is. An opinion piece recently appeared. That's all he says. An opinion piece recently appeared. Not who or where. That Google, quote, just flat out deletes queries and replaces them with ones that monetize better. Danny says, we don't. This piece contains serious inaccuracies about how Google search works. The organic, i.e. non-sponsored results you see in search are not affected by our ad systems. In particular, the piece seems to misunderstand how keyword matching is related to showing relevant ads. Blah, blah, blah. It's a long answer. And he says, we've answered this before. And he actually produced links to four different blog posts in which they talked about this.
Okay.
It's no secret Google search
Is he verified? Is that verified?
Well, I bet he is. Google's got it's a gold check.
It's a gold verified.
Which means it's a company, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And we know it's Danny Sullivan, even though the handle is just Searchly. In fact, in the bio, it says it's Danny Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
He does say this. It's no secret that Google search looks beyond the specific words in the query to better understand their meaning in order to show relevant organic results. So he does acknowledge that Google might, in fact, add stuff to the query behind the scenes. Maybe Kleenex. He says it's a helpful process. We've written about it many times. He brings four links. This ensures Google search can better show people organic results and connect them to helpful resources. If you make a spelling mistake or search for a term that's not on a page, but where the page has a close synonym, or if you aren't even sure exactly how to search for something, our meaning matching systems help. So that's semantic search. Google said they do this for a long time.
I don't see anything wrong with trying to save us from ourselves, but I don't necessarily like the idea of it suggesting specific products.
That's right.
We didn't ask.
I mean, if it replaces WEDS with Wednesday, that's not a bad thing
right.
at all. You know, your Kleenex example, Jeff, is a little...
I don't care for that.
That's a little... Well, I'm just trying to come up with something.
No. I mean, I think there's what Danny might be saying is it's two separate processes. One is a sort of adjustment of the natural language so that your query returns something more accurate. And then meanwhile, it's also trying to understand, okay, and we're going to want to like tag on to whatever you're looking at so we can give you contextually relevant ads. And so it's got like a separate logic that's trying to figure out what do we match up with so we can give you the ads that will make sense given what you're looking for. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the interest in displaying contextually appropriate ads undermines the quality of the search results you're getting back. And I think it sounds like that was the leap that was made to presume that the two processes related to each other. And I think what he's saying is no, they're separate because we've got different interests for each one of them. You know, there's a lot going on every time a user submits a query, but that doesn't mean that the interest in displaying the ads is changing what was trying to deliver you results. But as long as we're giving you relevant results, what would also be a relevant ad?
I mean, what it does sometimes, it says we return the results for blank and it's transparent about it. Mm-hmm. I just looked up facial tissues and it gave me facial tissues with Kleenex down the way. I looked up Kleenex and it was all Kleenex.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. I would think that you might be able to tell, but again, Google, you know, so much of this is a black box and Google certainly could try to hide their traces. Mm-hmm. Adam Kovacevich responded to Danny's post with this. I asked Google PR for a copy of the slide the Wired piece referred to. This is what Google says was the slide. You'd have to take this Google's word for this.
Adam's a really good guy.
Yeah. Which is probably why they responded to him.
Well, he also works for a think tanky thing that does represent tech companies, including Google. So
I think he used to work for Google, maybe.
He did as well. That's right.
Yeah.
Let's see this.
Could see why Megan Gray would have thought what she thought. Advertisers benefit by closing recall gaps. So you search clothing for a young child is in this next column. It says Nikolai Kidswear. So when you said kids clothing, maybe you meant Nikolai Kidswear.
I don't understand what we're looking at exactly.
Well, I think this is probably, remember, it probably went fairly quickly by in the trial. Megan Gray had already in her mind this idea of semantic searching adding brands. We're seeing brands added to stuff here. Not sure exactly why or when.
Yeah, we don't know how that's being done.
I don't understand how to read this matrix.
New matches for keyword includes both SNR, SNE, and SEMphrase and SEMBMM matches, plus kids, plus clothing. So kids... they're adding children when you write kids. Okay. When you add kids' clothing, they write kids.
You might
kids
be looking
wear.
At what tags, topics came up when you search for kids in clothing. These are the things that will come up.
Look, here's the problem.
I don't know.
I wish Wired had been a little more forthright in why they took it down.
And explain what was wrong with it.
Is it Jeff, is what would be best practices here?
Yes, it would have been. Absolutely. At one level, just put up a correction. They would put up a correction and explain exactly what the correction was. This is obviously past that. That her whole presumption, it must have torn down the whole presumption of the piece. Or maybe the other case here is Google said, that's all wrong. We're going to show you how it's wrong, but we're not going to tell you anything more. And there's enough for her to rewrite it or them to write a correction. I think Wired should have said more.
Here's what Wired wrote. Editor's note. By the way, they took it right down, and the headline on it is now a note from Wired leadership, which I thought by itself is interesting. Editor's note 10-6-2023. After careful review of the op-ed, how Google alters search queries to get at your wallet, and this is, I think, maybe a little smoking gun, relevant material provided us following its publication.
Otherwise known as reporting.
Well, where did the material come from? Google or come from a report?
My bet is she didn't even call Google. I don't know this.
Maybe.
But my bet is that if it was so off track and there was no reporting in it or not even an attempt to get, that alone, that also does not meet standards. That Wired one should have tried to call Google.
Yeah, what is
nothing wrong with Google providing material for this. That's
It was an opinion piece, not reporting. Yeah, so if that's the case, I don't think she was in a position or I'd have the expectation that she'd call Google. She was working for a competitor who didn't like Google, so I don't think they'd have any relationship. But Wired's editorial fact-checking to make sure that once you're doing it, I think she should have had the editorial backup to make sure that the conclusion she drew, because I don't think writing an op-ed as she was going to have access to more primary sources other than what her own eyes saw at the hearing. And I think the problem was she saw something, you know, she's not describing a slide that didn't exist. She's just describing a slide that has a different meaning than maybe than Google meant it. So context was lost. And I think it was more incumbent on Wired to make sure that, you know, they checked what that context was that she was looking at. But if that's the slide and you're looking at the slide and saying, I'm confused by the slide and what it's saying, then I don't know. Mistakes were made, but I'm not entirely sure they're all on her necessarily.
Okay, so the only reason I bring it up too, for a couple of reasons. One, I was curious what Jeff would say about journalistic practices. But the real issue is Corey wrote about this. He quoted the article. He has not taken down his pluralistic.com post about it. Wired did. I guess what I'm saying is, if it's Google was doing this, this would be, in my opinion, reason to stop using Google entirely. I mean, really appalling. But we don't know, and I feel like it's unclear. I mean, but we'd all agree if Google added Kleenex to a search for tissue, that would be because they were an advertiser that to increase their organic results. That would be problematic.
Well, there's an if then clause here that matters, right? A, if they do it, and B, why they would do it, and what the results would be if it brought up an advertiser's content in organic search.
Well, a couple of things there.
That would be a violation of their own principles.
Yeah. Well, I would submit
gave the user what they wanted.
Well, that's always their excuse, by the way. Google's excuse always is, we're just trying to give you what you want. When we put Google shopping results
or data YouTube results at the top,
I think it's something.
Well, I guess the reason it would seem very scandalous is if we all believe Google's trying to give us what we want, and now it turns out that no, actually Google is giving us what they want and making us think that it's what we wanted, then everyone feels tricked. And if that's true, that's why we would not want to use Google anymore.
Right.
That is so dramatic a change of how we understand things that, is it really that bad? And I don't know, sometimes it's worth taking a deep breath when things seem disproportionately bad. Unfortunately, in the recent years that we've been living, sometimes something that seems horrifically bad is in fact actually as horrifically bad as it seems. But normally, you know, if it really seems that earth shattering, it's probably we've taken it a step too far and need to rethink.
Well, where I think you're right, Leo, is that if if a core principle of Google, unlike what Yahoo was doing with Go, is that you cannot buy position in organic search, full stop. And there's no evidence that they've ever violated that. If this is evidence they violated that, that somebody in essence through a backdoor bought position in organic search, that's where I think, Leo, your point is most valid.
And furthermore, if Google did that because then there would be ads from competitors because competitors have a trigger, that would also be modifying the page based, I don't know. Remember when Larry Page wrote the original PageRank article very famously many years ago, 25 years ago now, he said you can't sell advertising if you're going to do this because it will compromise you. I think that's pretty clearly my complaint against Google at this point. And maybe it's even the DOJ's complaint against Google. This would be a smoking gun. It's not. It's gone. So I don't know. I don't know if it's been disproven either. I don't even know if Danny Sullivan's ex-tweet
post
is enough to disperse the suggestion because it seems kind of like a non-denial. So.
Let's say an investigation happens.
Well, how can it happen? Can't happen.
All right. How would they go about it?
Essentially, that's the trial.
Yeah.
Right? This is the investigation. It's the trial.
Well, I shouldn't say investigation.
I went through
an audit.
I went through all the, there was a fight over whether the discovery material should be available to the public. A lot of it is. A lot of it's redacted. But I went through it all, which was actually by itself is eye-opening. I'm sure you've done that as well, Kathy.
As part of my job, I tend to look at the stuff before it goes out the door.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm like, you just did doc review for fun?
For fun.
I don't know, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't fun. In fact, I was sorely tempted to get an AI to look at it for me. And if I could have
beat this up. So is every litigation firm that wants to not have to pay for it.
I could not find that slide. So, but what I did see is really, seems like Google's chief claim to having it redacted was, well, Your Honor, it'd be kind of embarrassing. And it is. It's really embarrassing. I recommend it to you all. It's easy to find. You can do a Google search.
On a level of principle, let's remember that Bill Gross created GoTo where the whole model was you did buy placement in core search and organic search.
Right.
And that was sold to Yahoo. Google then came along with its advertising model and violated Gross's patents and had to pay, I think, something like $300 million to either Yahoo or Gross because of that.
Interesting.
So Google was making the standard, part of the fascinating thing here is in the fights about Canada and links and all that. In the Bill Gross model, there was a market value for a link. In the Google model, a market value for the link was never created. That's what enabled publishers to say, your links are worthless. It is our content that is worth everything.
Right.
Until such time as Facebook takes down the links and they're all screaming like stuck pigs. Right. But so Google, by deciding not to charge for links in the search, there was no value created there. But yet Bill Gross is, when Bill Gross did his model, I knew Bill, it was from a friend of Bill's, and I said, nobody's ever going to want to use that. And he sold it for a fortune to Yahoo.
Well, good for him.
There was a model
he made money.
That said, this is what people are going to want, and we can give it to them.
Corey's point was, this is the in-shittification of the internet.
Mm-hmm. It's actually where it started, but it was Google cleaned up Bill's model.
Right. Well, maybe. This is where you go. The Antitrust Division, justice.gov, U.S. and Plaintiff States versus Google LLC trial exhibits. And enjoy yourself, Kathy. Have a great time.
It's
emails, it's presentations.
Make yourself some nice warm milk and tuck in for the night.
Here's a good one from 2017. It's a presentation called Google is Magical.
Get paid for my doc review. I don't want to do it for free.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting. This is not how search result works. Okay. How does it? The smoking gun. Here it is.
There's the wood. Put it on fire. There's the smoke.
What they're actually saying is because we can see what you click on the SERP, search engine results page, the interaction you do with our results page actually helps us learn what's a good result. And that's actually
How is wood a metaphor for what's the
It was logged.
It's logged.
Was logged.
Oh, wow.
Somebody give him a rim
clever
shot for
Google.
That.
Oh, you're good, Kathy. I could see how you got
speak Google.
Admitted to the bar. So, but this one's, you know, this is not a smoking gun. I thought it might be. But it's good because it's not fully redacted. But so many of these have big redactions across them. Is it unusual, Kathy, for for these to be published publicly, and B, for them not to be published? Because that's what Google wanted. And then I guess they found a middle ground where they redacted some of the more, I don't know, business-focused stuff.
Very typically, you know, when you're producing discovery, you'll try to make it attorney's eyes only, in which case, obviously, the other lawyers get to see it, but you don't even want their client necessarily to see it, because in theory, there's trade secret stuff to learn, let alone the public. But I mean, Google's fighting a war on multiple fronts. It's got a public component to it. So, you know, as much as it's thinking of what is the cost to it if stuff becomes publicly viewable, there's also a cost to not having it publicly viewable. So, you know, it was probably in their interest to make sure they sent that slide to Adam, because there was more to gain by disclosing it than by trying to keep it hidden.
Uh-huh. Here's a Hulu presentation. The difference between paid and organic search, in which they use Google to show the difference. That's the
Hulu?
Paid. That's the, yeah, I don't know why this is a Hulu.
Am I going to appear there?
Maybe. Hey, a little credit here to our main man. We've played before the YouTube clip of you back, what is this, 1987?
Was it then? Jeez. I was young.
Jeff
once.
Was working at People Magazine, famous reviewer, TV reviewer, and the folks at Moonlighting asked him to be on the show to explain the long absence and to catch people up on what had happened if they didn't watch previous episode. I was really pleased when I saw that Hulu is bringing Moonlighting back.
We love Moonlighting.
And Lisa,
listen to Leo.
I was even more pleased when I saw that they have kept your part in season 3,
very happy.
Episode 12. There's our good man,
somebody
Jeff Jarvis. Look at that, talking about Moonlighting. This is on Hulu. So Moonlighting was how Bruce Willis made his name, right?
Yep.
It was Sybil Shepherd, Bruce Willis. She owns a detective agency. He's a wise cracking son of a gun detective working for her, and there is, shall
romantic
we say,
tension for
some
9
real
years.
Chemistry between them. And really, the reason the show succeeded is for at least 4 of the 5 seasons. You were saying, are they? Will they? Won't they? Are they going to?
It ran for 9 seasons.
No, just 5. But I think, as I remember, they did resolve the romance, and the whole thing went downhill.
As always. Same for Sam and Diane.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Dave and Maddie with the original Sam and Diane. Yeah, there's some, you know, this was...
Well, Sam and Diane came first, didn't they?
Did they? I don't know. It's 1985. This is a good tongue-in-cheek. Just the names of the shows give you a hint. Back in the days when... It was really just episode 4, for mm-hmm. the most case. A womb with a view between a yuck and a hard place. Plastic.
It's just like making up show names here.
It is. Now you know where I got the inspiration. Ina Kleina Nacht Murder. It's good.
That's good.
It's good.
They check with the IRC too?
I don't know. Did they have an IRC back in 85? 85 doesn't seem that long ago, does it, Jeff?
Not for us.
Not for us. Nope. 23 plus 15 is 38 years ago.
Wow.
Yikes.
That's a long time.
Jesus. When you're young like you, Aunt, 38 years.
I'm not
like
young,
a long
sir.
Time.
What? You see all this here? I'm not young. It doesn't say
what
I'm
year was
either.
That again?
1985.
I wasn't even married yet. I was married the next year.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Kathy wasn't even born. It's amazing.
I see no reason to fact check you. Go ahead.
Oh, this just in from Danny Sullivan. Wait a minute. So I like my...
Adam's asking for the birth certificate.
Yeah. Right. The long form one?
No, we're going to redact that. Okay. Mike Mazick's calling it ex-Twitter. Which is good, because get it?
Perfect.
Because I can't call it X. Nobody even knows what I'm talking about. And I don't want to say the site formerly known as Twitter. That's really...
No, it's getting ridiculous of seeing in media.
That. Yeah, just say X. Well,
and it channels the Monty Python. This is an X parrot. This is an X platform. Because it just highlights the stupidity of what he did to destroy his own branding.
Well, he's not done yet.
No. There's still so much more to destroy.
He'll last to week, Elon started stripping headlines from the links shared to X Twitter.
It's the worst.
So immediately, just like he did when he took away the blue checks, people immediately started playing with it. And much to, I'm sure, Elon's chagrin, although he has been silent about it. But they're gone, right?
I can't say
they're gone. They're gone. I was suggesting to people that they need to put headlines in their images.
Well, that's kind of what's happening. In fact, it got so bad that Snopes had to weigh in with some fact-checking. Here's the Snopes article. Did Elon Musk endorse Biden, come out as transgender, and die of suicide? And, of course, false. But you might have been fooled, because on October 5th, a user named Armand Domolevsky posted this tweet. Elon Musk endorses Joe Biden for re-election, with a link to the article from Fortune.com. Now, if you clicked the link, you'd know that that article actually was Elon Musk takes the headlines off of tweets.
Oh, okay.
So Armand was just
very
kind of
clever.
Just,
yeah, very well done.
Okay. Satire. Yeah. But this is why you need the headlines, because otherwise the person who tweets it writes the headline. Just as...
Oh, yeah. That's one example of many that I saw.
Here's
that,
another one.
Brilliantly.
Yeah.
I wonder how Elon long it's going to take him to roll it out, because I'm not seeing any of that with my own stuff.
You don't see headlines, do you?
Everything that I post for Twit is...
No, you see the headline, but your readers don't.
The readers don't. Oh, I didn't get that.
Well, let me go look
at your feed of something someone's posted from a...
Yeah.
And you don't know if they just posted a photo? The other problem is sometimes you click on it because you think you're going to go to the article. No, you're just making the photo big.
So here's Eric Garland, Garland tweeting Haaretz. Now, he's writing the headline. Not that there's no... Remember, there used to be under the slide, there'd be a more of that slide saying what the actual headline was.
Well, what I do is, when I use the Twitter button from a site like Washington Post, it will include the headline in the text, taking the space away from me and my brilliant tweet.
Yep.
But I keep that headline, then text in there above.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just really sad to me. I remember a conversation with a friend of mine who was a lawyer for Twitter, and he was telling me about, because it was talking about my blog, and he was like, you can use the thing called cards where you can have like this block of information get passed through to us, and like we're posting that. Like, go figure out how to make your blog publish along those lines. And I was like, oh, that was so cool, and I never got around to it. And just, I remember the enthusiasm that he was describing Twitter having this ability, and it was really cool, and now it's gone. So the destruction is just so palpable.
Yeah, this is, Facebook did it. Everybody does it. There's a standard for how you craft your post and the meta tags you put in there. That's what we do on our site. Mm-hmm. Patrick set it up that way so that when sites like Twitter or Facebook pull it up, they pull up the card, not just the image. Yep. Twitter's just decided, Elon said it's not aesthetic to pull up somebody else's card. I'm just going to give you the image.
There's no possible rationale that actually makes any sense.
It's not aesthetic. As a result, you
and
get
I now
tweets.
See it, Mr. Jarvis.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. There's a link
we've
there.
We've ruined
an image,
our aunt's day.
But there's no headline.
But no head.
You have to put the headline
in. Put it all in.
The problem is the person who writes the tweet can do that. For instance, here, Elon Musk, formerly Elon, comes out as transgender. They even picked a nice little Axios article. That's not what the Axios article is about. You don't know that because the headline's not there. Here's another one. Elon found dead at Twitter. Not the case. In fact, it's the same article from Fortune that says the headlines are gone. So,
I like this Armand Domolevsky. I'm following Armand.
She's clever. Well, and, the Snopes had to say, no, none of this is true. This is just misleading because of the way yet another hazard
larger
to
point
an ill,
that this is what Elon
ill
done
thought out policy, basically.
Wait, so because Elon put this post into policy, Snopes is having to debunk it.
Yes.
The logical consequences of his dumb policy.
Well, in fact, what Snopes...
To clean up his own reputation because of his... That was ruined by his own business decisions.
Well, and in fact, what Snopes is going to be facing is pretty much debunking everything, because you can write any headline you want. And this gets to the big story of the week, which is the EU is now saying, you got to do something about disinformation on Twitter. It's particularly relevant because of what's happening in Israel right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a Wired magazine story. Elon's Musk is posting his way through the Israeli Hamas war.
You're gonna piss off Jammer B.
Apparently pissed you off. Yesterday, this is from October 10th.
Might it be his agent?
What's left of the trust and safety team
overrising you.
Announced the measures it was taking to try and curb the virulent spread of disinformation around the Israel-Hamas war on its platform. But meanwhile, Elon's reposting all sorts of disinformation. And in fact, anybody who wants to can. The EU has said, you've got 24 hours to fix this. This is a big problem.
Did you read Mike Masnick on the topic?
Well, let's do it right now, shall we? On text
down below in the rundown, it's labeled Masnick under government.
So the EU
in 84
puts this whole mandate on them. What are they going to do? They take Twitter out of the
Well, a number of people are saying there's nothing you can do.
Do
if you don't fix this, EU could be taking you down. Actually, Mike says, sure, there's disinfo on X Twitter, but the EU should not be demanding censorship.
Ah,
they're going to use the DSA. And this was why we talked a lot about the Digital Services Act before it became law and the problematic element of this. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, this is cheering the imposition of a censorship regime is not a good idea. It's a censorship regime. See, it's
hard to say, so don't do it.
I don't even want to say it. It's just not worth the dignity. But it is not something to cheer. It's censorship, and we should not like that.
Right.
Because, okay, right now, most, I wouldn't even say all of the governments in Europe are more or less anti-Nazi, but it wasn't that long ago that they were very pro-Nazi. So if the government gets to decide what is okay, it's not a given that they're going to decide that the okay stuff is the things you like and the not okay stuff is the things you hate. Well, it could very easily be the other way around. Giving them the power to decide is a really bad idea.
What if the EU says, this is not censorship, this is moderation, content moderation?
Well, they are saying that, and no, they're wrong, because what people keep ignoring is that... they're talking about mandatory, this comes up in America too, with the idea of mandatory transparency reports. But if you have to be transparent about every single content-based decision that you make, you're going to be chilled. You're not going to be able to make them as freely as you'd be able to make them, because having to be, worry about somebody looking over your shoulder, or even just having to go through the act of writing down what you thought and sort of figure out what you meant and come up in some way that it's readable to somebody else, that's not free expression. Mm-hmm. That's, filling out checkboxes and feeling it limits the universe of ideas that you're capable of expressing and moderation choices you're capable of exercising and things like that. So even to the extent that Europe's you have to be accountable and, if you're going to leave it up, you need to explain. No, that's still a problem. Even if it's censorship light, it's still censorship. It still comes out. It's just that the act of chilling the choices is a little more indirect than to just say, thou shalt not post on X topic, mm-hmm. because it's functionally leading to the same end of thou shalt not post on X topic, Y topic, Z topic, and quite a few more topics, because people are, what would you feel free to be able to post? It would be so anodyne, because if I post about cats and kittens, I guess I can get away with that. But anything more complex, how do you document that?
Yeah.
Mike's gotten a big fight on on Blue Sky about this exact thing. His post this morning said that a year ago he was told there was no way the Digital Services Act would be used for censorship. It was only about, quote, best practices. But, of course, that's exactly now what the EU is saying, is we want you to pull down these posts that we consider disinformation. Elon, by the way, is pushing back.
Not particularly well, but yes.
Well, and that's the issue. I mean, we can go back and forth, but, you know, we have a First Amendment in the U.S. that says the government shall not tell private entities what to do. They shall not abridge the freedom of speech.
Right.
But that's an American right.
Yep.
Yes. I don't know if the EU has this concept.
No, they have a freedom of expression in their rights, but it's by no means.
Germany has long forbidden eBay from selling Nazi memorabilia or anything.
Same with France.
That's censorship from our point of view. That's government abridging the rights of these companies from our point of view. But that's an American point of view.
But it shouldn't be. I mean, I get into these arguments with Europeans all the time because they're like, oh, take you and your American exceptionalism. We're different over here. But no, you're not actually that different. You do have the rights of the principle of free expression built into documents, the European Convention for Human Rights. You also have an appreciation for democracy, which depends on free expression. So my argument back to Europeans is if you like democracy, you have to have free expression. And if you're going to have free expression in any sort of meaningful way, this is the mechanics you have to follow to make it work. Because they're all like, oh, well, we balance it. And I'm kind of like, if you've balanced it, you don't have it at all because you can't count on it existing in a way that's going to make sure that the ideas that need to get expressed will be able to be expressed. And if it's a maybe, you know, you may get lucky for a while, which I think is what people are looking at Europe and saying, well, we don't have any problems. It's totally working for us. But meanwhile, dissidents, you know, people who are just in political oppositions are getting censored, if not arrested, or, you know, there's a lot that they're like, oh, we're fine. We have no problems. We can totally tolerate this. The government is right. Let's trust it. And they're just kind of ignoring an awful lot of evidence to the contrary, both on exhibit now and the fact that, you know, you may be lucky in the calm before the storm, but if this sort of thing can happen, you're going to be in trouble. And basically, they're not seeing that what the EU wants to do is what Russia wants to do, what China wants to do, what China has done. And, and they're not self-identifying. And they're thinking it's something completely different when it's actually completely the same.
Also, Mike writes, counsel. I think Musk could have done many, many things to better deal with disinformation on X Twitter. But it's not the government's place to step in and threaten him over speech.
Amen.
I mean, we can say, hey, disinformation, real problem on Twitter. It's don't believe anything you see. And there have been, in fact, autoplay videos that are horrendous. I'm seeing parents saying, I'm terrified my kids are going to see this stuff and be traumatized. And I mean, it's just it's bad. But you can't. The government doesn't get to step in and shut that down.
Well, at the same time, you have the opposite happening in the Florida and Texas laws that are going to go to the Supreme Court, where they're being forced to carry content. You may not take it down, and that's an abrogation of the.
It's just the other side of the same coin, though, right? We would agree.
Exactly. Again, it's government interference. Or this morning on Morning Joe, there was a Republican and a Democrat congressman who were saying that. The Republican was saying, and the Democrat was agreeing with him, and Mika Brzezinski was agreeing with him, that students at Harvard and other universities, including CUNY, saying things against Israel on behalf of Palestine was anti-Semitism. And that's the first question is, what is it or who's to say? And then the second question, and I'm not supporting what the students are saying, to be clear, but the second thing was they said that we should cut off federal money to these universities unless they crack down. Well, that's government saying what it's not in the press then. It's in the university.
Yeah.
It's government and speech. And you know, Mika saying, yeah, that's the right idea. No, it's not.
Nope.
And you're benefiting, Mika, from our First Amendment as a member of the press.
There's an awful lot of people who are sort of really glib about rights that they depend on for their own lives and livelihood. But speaking also as somebody who might be in the crosshairs of some of this terrible speech, I don't feel any safer. I don't want the paternalism. If there's lessons that I take out of the terrible things that have happened to people I connected culturally to, it's that the loss of the ability to call for help or to point out there's a problem and to speak against it was a big reason why the worst possible things were able to happen. It doesn't protect the vulnerable to make sure that the vulnerable can't speak out against the things that hurt them. And if the government is just taking sides for who's the winners and who's the losers and who gets to speak, that's not going to protect anybody. I mean, especially also in particular on an issue like Mideast politics, where there's vulnerable people all over the place, some in Israel, some in Palestine, where, you know, if you have to choose who we're going to protect and which interests and which people we're going to protect, that means that a lot of the people are going to get hurt.
Yeesh.
So stay out. There's no place for government to put its thumb on these debates.
So what, by the way, the EU has told Elon, you have 24 hours. Let's hear what you're going to do.
Elon has tweeted the person who sent the letter. The person who sent the letter, Thierry, I can't remember
Thierry
his last
Breton.
Name. He's actually on Blue Sky. So here's a person who's taking issue with social media, also availing himself of social media to make sure that his statements can be read by people.
Oh, he's like, done videos with Elon.
So Elon tweeted, our policy is that everything is open source and transparent, an approach I know the EU supports. He's asking Breton to list the violations you allude to so the public can see them.
He didn't write this.
Thierry is responding, you're well aware of your users and authorities' reports on fake content and glorification of violence. Up to you to demonstrate that you walk the talk.
You see, that's the other thing here. I can't wait to hear Kathy on this. This is the problem with the vagueness of, for example, the UK online safety bill, because it's telling you, take down harmful stuff, take down bad stuff, but we're not going to define harm.
Right,
we're not going to tell you what it is. And if you don't get it, your ass is grass, which is a horrible chill, which means you get over moderation. Same thing happens with NetzDG in Germany, where too much is taken down because the statute is so vague.
It's almost like you're washing your hands of it. We want you to do something about it, but not because we said so, but please do something about it.
And the government doesn't know how to do it. They can't scale to this effort. So they've deputized this non-governmental agency to take on a governmental act without due process, without openness. And they're saying, you do this or we're going to come after you. That's not what should be happening in a democracy.
Yeah. And I think they're not understanding, like, it is possible that they think that by not being specific, they're not actually censoring, because we're not telling you what to do. But it doesn't work that way. No. Telling somebody that they have to do something, you know, you've already reached the threshold of a censorship regime. And the fact that you're not being more specific doesn't exonerate you of the problems that you're causing if you're the government doing this. It has chilled speech and it has taken away the independent freedom and discretion of whoever you're trying to regulate to do whatever they think they need or want to do. If that discretion is impinged upon, doesn't matter how you're doing the impinging, you've impinged, and that's a problem and a violation of free expression.
Yes.
So what do you suggest we do? Just not use Twitter anymore?
I'm not using Twitter anymore.
I am, but I don't find the stuff there. I mean, you also know who to block.
I mean, who do you mean by we? I mean, what are we trying to accomplish? Like, if we're speaking we, general people, I think Twitter's toast, and let's not go there, because I think going there ends up supporting the worst things that it ends up doing, and I think it's time to abandon it. But I think that's the appropriate reaction as a policy matter. Not as a policy matter, because quite frankly, the appropriate policy matter is to leave it to the users to say, screw you, Elon, we're going to Blue Sky.
Right.
And
then we get to that whole other argument, is should we all be leaving Twitter? And I'm still there because there are communities there I care about, and I want to try to spread decency there. That's my choice. But in the end, at some point you're supporting Twitter and you leave it, and the market speaks.
There is a silver lining to this absolute crap of what Elon's done to that platform, which is prior to now, the governments were operating under the assumption that the big social media were here, the be all end all. The internet is thusly, it's terrible, it sucks, it'll never change. And it actually is sort of interesting to say, see, your assumptions were not right, because one of the incumbents you thought would be here till the end of time is a train wreck now and losing and about to fail on a business standpoint. And hey, look, we've got all these little ones that were able to bubble up because they're bubbling up in a policy space where they have the freedom to do that. So like, these are the arguments to say, this is why you have a, you, this is why you should have a policy and also a constitutional mandate that the government has to keep its hands off, because this is allowing the circle of life of people who want to speak are able to find the communities and platforms that support the speech they want to have, because the government isn't intermeddling with that. And that's why a policy of non-intermeddling is the correct one, and also why the Constitution dictates that it must be the only one.
I just don't know how long it'll take for these other projects that are bubbling up to be part of the critical mass. I mean, we've been talking about Blue Sky for a year now, but this is a tiny tech circle of folks right
now. Kathy, I noticed that seems to be where you're most active. Is that right, Blue Sky?
Yeah, and I feel slightly guilty about it. I actually prefer to support Mastodon, and I've sort of started having an invite policy, which is I'll give you a Blue Sky code, but only if you tell me that you're also on Mastodon.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very good.
Cool. One of the reasons I Kathy's Law. I like the openness of Mastodon. I like the federation model. It's a lot also more, Blue Sky will have one, but it's not as mature. Blue Sky is also currently not paywalled, but locked down. So I like to support the openness, and I think the promise and potential of what Mastodon can be. And quite frankly, I think I get different interactions on each platform,
right.
And I do really value the community that I've ended up finding on Mastodon. I think it's full of many more, I want to say normal people, but I think it's really they're my people. Like, I got a nice supply of geeks and interesting people, and I don't know, maybe none of us are normal, but this is a comfortable crowd where if I ask a question, I tend to get an awful lot of quality answers back in good faith. Blue Sky, on the other hand, what I appreciate about it is its bigness and the fact that it feels so unlimited, but sometimes that feels a little overwhelming in terms of where I'm spending my time. And I think that might be why I'm spending more time on Blue Sky, because it's a more finite community and I sort of can go through my whole stream and actually finish it. And I think
that's
I'm just
ironic.
Having some
Blue Sky because it's
issues
smaller.
That are making me feel better with that.
That's interesting.
I both like that and don't like it about it. Like, it's comfortable in terms of my usability needs right now, but philosophically, that's not actually what I want. What I want is, you know, if I'm going to bother posting, I also want people to read it. And there just aren't that many people to read it on Blue Sky.
I want a megaphone.
But I think the ant, to your question about critical mass. There's critical mass for you. How many people are enough for you to talk to? Because you never talk to all of Twitter.
Is this true?
You talk to whoever you talk to, right?
Is this true?
And so I think that's the first calculation that we have to make, is that small is good. Mastodon is big enough. I have great conversations there. I love it for that. It is critical mass. I hit critical mass very quickly there, and I'm ashamed I didn't listen to Leo earlier. Then the next question, however, is what's critical mass for impact and movements?
Right.
And that's a different calculation, and so we, you know, may all dislike journalists, but if they're not reading us, it's not going to get in the press. It's not going to have impact.
It's just about every week we have some type of discussion about how Twitter has just really turned into a craptastic mess, but yet that platform is still there and still rolling along, and nobody tends to really just dump it and say, you know what, I'm going to move on to something else. The critical mass
individual
is still over there, you know?
Individual communities are hitting tipping points, though. You do see waves. After each stupid thing, there is a wave. And the waves are accruing. What I think is happening now is maybe more of the waves are going to Blue Sky than Mastodon. Yes. But the problem with Mastodon, and it's both its feature and its bigness, is also its Achilles heel.
Okay.
People are used to usability that is a lot more one click, I know exactly what's going on, whereas to get onto Mastodon, its power is in with some sophistication, but it's intimidating people. They don't know where to go and what service to sign up for and how it works.
Yeah.
And that's becoming daunting, whereas Blue Sky is, hey, give me a code, and it's a very easy process to get on. So I think that's part of the reason why Blue Sky is getting, you know, maybe more oxygen than Mastodon, maybe. But Mastodon is so big, and you know, it's still swallowing up thousands of people weekly, monthly. Yeah. It's pretty big.
Kathy, one example of what you just said is I suddenly, because I have some German friends on social media, but suddenly I was seeing German after German after German after German. I was like, what's going on? And then finally I saw some reference that Musk had platformed or endorsed the AfD, the far right German neo-Nazi party.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's why. And so all these German journalists and all these Germans were coming over, and it's great. I've got to, you know, use translate more. but it was that exactly that kind of wave. And I'm finding my book history people who I adore on Twitter, and I don't want to lose. The problem there is I'm seeing much less activity on Twitter, but I'm not seeing them on either of the other platforms.
They haven't turned up somewhere else.
Yeah.
Threads. I don't want threads for about a month
and
a half.
We don't need to speak of
Threads. Well, I'm trying to sell books.
By the way, it's done. Wait a minute, is Threads done?
It's on sale now.
I still use Threads.
I went back to Threads to do it.
I still use Threads because it's another spot to yell into the megaphone. You know, that's about it. All of these things.
I would be a lot happier with both Threads and Blue Sky if they followed through on their promise to federate.
That would make things a lot easier to justify.
But they've made no move to, and I kind of predicted a long time ago that they never would. Because
you did.
It's not,
but one thing I think that is also meaningful is one of the other things I like about Mastodon is it doesn't have a block at the moment. If you post on Mastodon, unless you're locked down, those posts are public and embeddable. And what I think can happen is basically with a quality search engine, why aren't we like there's no search native to Mastodon yet, but in theory, it doesn't matter because you can post.
Mastodon did add search.
They've added it.
No. I think it's coming. Yeah.
No, it's in the current version.
No, it's added.
It's in here now? Yeah. Okay.
Well, it depends this is part of the problem with Mastodon. Depends on which server
Who's managing it?
Mastodon.social,
It's a form. We were talking about cards earlier. Like, this is a kind of unit of information that can be published on Mastodon, but viewed via all sorts of other pages around the web. And that, I think, is really powerful. And that's one of the things that I think made Twitter really powerful, where we like to write articles, we're embedding tweets, we like to quote the people who posted. That if you just treat it as a self-publishing platform that can be excerpted and cited on other sites and platforms around the web, it's powerful. And that power that Twitter was offering is now here. I think we're just kind of ignoring it, but that's significant. And I think that also gives Mastodon the potential for power that Twitter used to have, and we don't have to wait for it. We just have to use it.
As of today, you can follow any WordPress.com blog on Mastodon. They're federated. I've used Mastodon as a support for my posse strategy. It's funny, my daughter just discovered posse. She said, have you heard of this posse thing? I said, heard about it. We invented it.
Cool, Dad.
Post once, syndicate everywhere. It's the open web concept Kevin Martz was all behind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's part of the indie web and philosophy, which is essentially, and I think I really still believe this, although it's very old-fashioned, you should have one place, your site, antpruitt.com, that is your place. All your stuff starts there and is syndicated everywhere else. And Mastodon helps you with that. My comments on my blog come through Mastodon, which is kind of a great way of creating a conversation because the commenting happens on Mastodon and then it continues. Let's take a little
Leo,
break.
Would you like to hear it? Would you first, you want to hear it? You want to? I'm offering you an I told you so opportunity.
Oh, this will be good.
I never would say I told you so.
Oh, he never rubs anything in anybody.
Go ahead.
So you remember Jurna.host, which started after.
Oh, there's a big controversy raging there. Tell us about that.
Adam Davidson, who I think did a wonderful job. He had a great team of people who did it, but it finally just became too much. And they've handed it over to Jeff Brown, who does Newsy, who nicely took it on. So,
and I saw a number of people say, I'm not going to be on Jurna.host because who the hell is Adam Brown? Or whatever his name is, Jeff Brown.
He's a good guy. Well, I saw one guy was saying that, yeah, and I responded to him that Jeff's done a good job with Newsy, I think. He took it on. I'm grateful he did that. And so,
is he the Jeff Brown who created Flat Stanley? No. Is he the Jeff Brown who is founder of the Soul Shaping Institute? No. You can see the confusion. There's quite a few.
Did he write
Articulations and seven other books? No. Is he apprenticed with top criminal lawyer?
No.
No. Okay, well, I don't know who this Jeff Brown is. Newsy, huh?
So this Jeff Brown is a nice guy.
What is Newsy?
But he does Newsy, and he's done a good job there, and he's tried to help out journalists, and he did it more in your model, Leo, where he didn't try to verify people in the same way. Yeah, it's, as you can attest, it's work to have a community.
Yeah.
You need to have work put into it.
So Newsy.social was his mastodon, and he is now running Journa.host. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. But his new account is now on honeytree.social. What's that? I can see why Mastodon might confuse people just a little bit.
So the guy who was complaining went to DARE, D-A-R, which is the one that was started by Timnit Gebru.
Yes, and she was complaining about it. But I have to say, I think that's a misunderstanding of what the Fediverse is. You can...
That's the point. That's the benefit.
Verify yourself. Yeah, and you can move. But if you want, you can verify yourself.
Yeah,
you don't need somebody else to say who you are. Right. In fact, I just read. Oh, you're going to. Here's your chance to tell me I told you so, Jeff. I just signed up for Facebook and I used. I used Mastodon.
I just got a text from somebody.
That was me.
It was like, did he sign up? And I was like, no, that's a faker.
No, it's me.
Somebody asked me.
It's me. Like, and by the way, if you go to my first post, it says to prove I'm me.
Oh snap!
I link to my Mastodon where I say, "Yeah, that's me," and Mastodon is verified. Yeah, so it should. Now I'll tell you why I did this, because I think it's really important, especially with this current massive disinformation in the war, but also what we will be getting between now and November 2024. To keep an eye, I think I need to keep an eye on Facebook because I think it's one of the places. Plus, I'm going to be 67 next year, and that's where all my friends are. They're all on Facebook. How am I supposed to keep up with my friends?
That's where I am. So I got my MySpace page.
I still have my MySpace, of course, but nobody's there.
Remember 1985?
Yeah. I'm going to join the moonlighting group.
I got to tell you about this thing called Blogspot.
The reason that I did is ostensibly because I wanted to keep up and see what's happening there. But, you know, it also is one way to stay. It's one of the only ways. The other reason was we had a death in the family, and the only way to keep up with that stuff these days, at least with those family members, they're not geeks.
Yeah.
You got to be on Facebook. So that's where the memorial page is and all of that stuff. So there were a number of things that kind of all converged last night. I thought, yeah, Jeff's going to kill me.
Oh, look what I'm doing. I'm going to add a friend.
I am not following people.
Hey.
Who I don't know.
Hey.
But this is fascinating. Hey. You're doing it out of the goodness of your heart.
No, don't say that. That's not exactly it.
I know I left Facebook years ago.
Well, I mean, because
I'm going to create this account.
Part of it is
keep an eye on.
Wow, boy, that's a
these
big
are
set
these
of
are
boobs.
Suggested for me. that's the real reason. What the hell is this? Why do they want me to? Why are they suggesting? What did I do to deserve this?
Your reputation precedes you, Leo.
Incidentally, that is one thing I found really weird.
Told him.
And one of the really interesting things about Facebook is the stuff that I didn't follow anybody. The stuff that's on my feed from. People, it's really interesting. So this is actually part of the research process.
Yeah, a bit of an experiment with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I cannot get it to... Okay, so Facebook has decided to give me comics that, by and large, I like, except it was feeding me Family Circus, which I found...
Ooh, the worst.
That's reason to quit.
The worst comic ever.
No, Nancy's the worst comic ever.
But I'm getting Peanuts and Calvin and Hobbes, and that's not too bad.
That's okay.
So,
yes.
So that works for me. It's also giving me ABBA. Lots of ABBA. I didn't dislike ABBA, although it's growing. The dislike is growing because it just keeps feeding me ABBA. And I keep trying to like make it stop, and it's not really taking the hint.
Well, it's worth it alone for me because I follow Pursuing Pork Tenderloin Sandwiches.
By the way, there's now all these people trying to follow me. I'm not going to add this big circle of people I don't know, so don't bother.
Yep.
You're breaking hearts, Leo. You're breaking hearts.
This is part of the reason I left in the first place.
You now regret saying you're
there's mad. A whole bunch of French people named Leo Laporte, so like they're going to just, all these three other Leo Laportes are going to have this sudden wave of why are these people following
me? Here's how you know it's emails. Me. It's got a picture of me and my, well, you can't even use do that.
No, that's not verified.
Because they can steal that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so there's a link back to my Facebook on Mastodon. And Mastodon is verified, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, let's take a break, which we were going to do about half an hour.
Sorry.
That's how we make these shows ever so long. Moment. But you can now say, I told you so, Jeff.
Yes, and you can say, I told you so, Leo.
What was that about? I forgot already.
That was about our host.
Oh, yeah. I was right on that. Our show today... our show today brought to you by Vanta. Jerk. Vanta is a brand new sponsor. Welcome to Happen. Welcome to the show. And I love, do you not love their slogan, compliance that doesn't sock too much? Get it?
Give them a rim shot.
Get compliant. Build trust fast with Vanta. Vanta was founded in 2018 in the wake of several high-profile data breaches. And, of course, it's not gotten better in the intervening 5 years. Online security is job one. Vanta understands firsthand how hard it is for fast-growing companies to invest the time and manpower it takes to build a solid security foundation. Vanta was inspired by a vision to restore trust in internet businesses by enabling companies to improve and prove their security. So, proof is a big part of this, right? Growing a business, more tools, right? More third-party vendors, data sharing, more partners, also known as way more risk. Vanta's market-leading trust management platform brings GRC and security efforts together. Integrate information from multiple systems. Reduce risks to your business and your brand, and all without the need for additional staffing. By automating up to 90% of the work for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, you'll be able to focus on strategy and security, not maintaining compliance. And you know what? G2 loves Vanta. Year after year, here are a couple of honest customer reviews from business leaders. Quote, there's no doubt about Vanta's effect on building trust with our customers. As we work more with Vanta, we can provide more information to our current and potential customers about how committed we are to information security. And Vanta is at the heart of it. This is from a chief technology officer. Head of quality assurance and customer support writes, the best in automated compliance monitoring. The best. Look at 5 stars from G2. From a COO, great tool with even better customer support. From a founder and COO, easy to use with incredible integrations. Join 5,000 fast-growing companies that leverage Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. By the way, our listeners get $1,000 off Vanta. Go to vanta.com/twig to claim this discount. V-A-N-T-A, vanta.com/twig. Welcome, Vanta. Great to have you.
Welcome.
On the show. I like how at the top of the ad they say, Vanta is pronounced Vanta.
Vanta.
Good to know.
Just so you know.
Well, in Germany, it would be Fanta.
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 Wanta. All right. Let's talk about something else. I'm so tired of Elon. We don't talk about Elon. I feel like, you know, some of this we talked about before.
There's nothing new under the sun.
I guess I did it on Sunday on Twitter. For instance, Sunday. The story that the Amazon Echo says the 2020 election was stolen.
Oops.
That's not good. Talk about disinformation. Credit to the Washington Post's Kat Zakrzewski. That's pronounced Vanta.
Does it still say it?
Zakrzewski. No, but she was smart. She recorded it. She recorded it, and I can play it for you. Her...
Was the 2020 election stolen?
From Rumble.com, the 2020 election was stolen by a massive amount of election fraud.
Oh.
So she was smart to record it because as soon as the Washington Post contacted Amazon, as all good journalists do, they said, oh, whoops, and it's gone. Except Only gone from that query. So they've got So the problem
is, according
to
Rumble, that's the first mistake.
You honed right in on the problem.
Well, I just have a way, you know?
Rumble was a video streaming service, kind of right-wing video streaming service.
Oh, yeah.
They also referred to a Substack that said the 2020 races were notorious for many instances of irregularities and indications pointing to electoral fraud taking place in major metro centers. The issue is that Amazon is using non-reliable sources, I guess.
What are they going to do to filter? Because that's on the public web. Do they need to put in an if statement says if right wing? No, that would be wrong.
Amazon spokeswoman Lauren Reimheld says these responses were errors. that were delivered a small number of times and quickly fixed when we brought to our attention. We continually audit and improve the systems we have in place for detecting and blocking inaccurate content. Reimheld said that during elections, Alexa works with credible sources like Reuters, Ballotpedia, and Real Clear Politics to provide real-time information. But the smoking gun is, yeah, they fixed the ones that the Post had mentioned, but there were other questions, which still...
Because they've got to clean up their sources. All these companies are so afraid of making judgments.
Yeah.
They've got to make judgments.
Yeah.
Right. They don't want to.
This is one of the reasons I went back on Facebook. I think, you know, we've seen everybody from Alex Stamos on this show, Joan Donovan on this show. Many experts in disinformation say that this is what's coming down the pike is going to be an avalanche of disinformation. Interestingly, the Israeli-Hamas war has actually been a test case for that because Twitter was just full of videos purporting to be from the war, but actually from a video game, videos from 2 years ago and other geographic locales, and just complete misstatements. Yeah. And if you read this stuff, wherever you read it, and believe it, then you're getting a false picture.
Twitter is the end of a bar on a late Saturday night, and we should expect no more from it in general than that.
Real people don't get their news from Twitter, do they?
Well, they did.
At one point, yeah.
Some reason.
I mean, the question is, are they still now? Because what basically seems to be the consensus is if you had a pre-curated list of people you were following who were appropriate experts, you can get decent information.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not necessarily all going to have the experts all lined up. Now that the cards are gone, like, you're not really going to be able to see the mainstream. Well, you're not going to be able to see the journalism posted. And just functionally, the tool is so kludgy that your ability to navigate and interact with it is just so compromised. I basically quit. I'd like to say I was principled and I quit because of the Nazis, but I mostly quit when he killed TweetDeck. Like, all of a sudden, my ability to interact with the medium was compromised, where I couldn't spend time on it.
Likes this new one, Deck.blue, and I think Scooter X and our IRC likes it,
Deck.
Too.
Deck.blue?
It's for threads. It's not Twitter. Yeah. It's for threads. But it looks just like TweetDeck.
Not
threads. Sorry.
It's for Blue Sky.
Blue Sky. Yeah. Pardon me. Blue Sky.
Okay, you're confused.
It's for your skeets. Yeah. Let's get it right. Okay.
I haven't started using it yet, but I like that it exists, so I'll try it out when I get the time.
Yeah, it's got columns. You can move them around. You can change the settings for individual columns. I think this is good. You can mute words like that.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
With your experiment for Facebook coming up, you know you're going to see some pretty questionable
I hope I do.
Come up on your screen.
I think I just did, actually.
questionable information, I should say, not just imagery. Let's say something is served up to you from someone you know. Are you going to take the time
to correct them?
Right.
Good question.
No. I'm not going to have anything to do with it.
Should you?
I'm going to unfollow him.
I would.
I don't know. I think this is a very selfish point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But my attitude is ain't nobody got time for that.
I'm with you. I'm the same way. That's the thing. And people are like, you should probably educate them.
Who's
you know what, man? I don't have the energy.
And they don't want to be educated, I'm afraid. They're just getting fights with them.
Pardon? Yeah.
I don't have a single rule. It really depends on the person, the relationship, and that cuts both ways, where sometimes it's because it's a person I care about enough that it's worth the conversation. And sometimes it's sort of a, you know, I'm going to take the time, because sometimes I think you have to put something that just puts a new idea in their head. They may not believe it, but they may be in such a vortex of wrongness that sometimes you just sort of have to point out that something else exists, where, you know, is the effort to upside worth it? And, you know, it also depends on the person. It depends on my time. It depends on the day and stuff. But I wouldn't say, I don't tend to say absolutely yes or absolutely no. It's the mood.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at
gosh.
Facebook.
What the heck?
I have
just
noticed there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. Well, here's an example. Look, I don't want to see this anymore, right? So I'm going to say, why do you want to hide that? Sexually suggestive. Done. No, good. We're hit. What?
It's not. Bring it's it right not. Back.
It's sexual exploitation. Thanks. You won't see the suggestion again. Boom!
It's, right back.
I think you found a bug.
It shouldn't have been proposed or in the first place. Sexual exploitation. I don't want.
All right. What happens if you said child nudity? Would it come?
Oh, let's
that?
Do it. Mm. Yeah, let's do it. Nudity. Child nudity. Now we got it.
No,
nope, that's
broken.
A problem.
It's broken.
That's a bad problem.
For those who are just
refresh
listening,
the page just for the sake of.
Oh, it's it's a suggested group of. Cleavage. Oh, good. Okay. There you go. I just needed to refresh the page. Not relevant. Thank you. Goodbye.
Angie's back.
No, but it was repopulating every time you did it, so that shouldn't be on
there
you.
There we go. New York City,
Now
Petaluma.
I can see virtual yard sales of the Petaluma good. Area helping each other, Petaluma. That's good. Let's see some groups suggested just for me. These are the good ones. These are the good ones. Petaluma Honomers. Peeps, this is all Petaluma all the time. That's good. Wow, there's a lot of Petaluma stuff on Facebook. Jiminy Christmas. Okay.
You can't believe that.
I feel like Rip Van Winkle. So there's this thing called what?
Facebook.
What is that?
The Facebook to you.
The Facebook, huh?
Bookface, Facebook.
Have you been following?
Cute gal in the dining hall.
And we call every time you post a bloop. And if you get three bloops, it's a blorp.
It's a blorp. Okay, I'm writing this down now. I got a little book.
Will you put something on my wall, Leo? Then I can poke you.
Do they even call it walls anymore?
I forgot about
for years.
Walls.
Yeah. Have you been following the Samuel Bankman-Fried case?
No.
Trial. No. It's too much. They're There's too much up. Going on.
Yeah.
Too much.
We can't follow it all. Have you read the new book?
Oh, God, no.
Whose book?
I read reviews about the new book.
Well, yeah. That's enough. If you read the reviews, you don't need to read the book. That's the rule.
Someone wrote about Bankman.
Oh, not just anyone.
Not just someone.
Michael Lewis, the author of Moneyball and The Big Short. And
oh, boy.
The Blind Side. And
two authors had really bad choices in subjects this year.
Their choices are fine. Their gormless lack of skepticism is
gormless. Gormless. What a nice word of the day.
I love gormless. Nice word.
Oh,
it sounds like
I'm
sci-fi.
I'm so jealous that's in your brain and it came out.
It means lacking sense or initiative. Foolish.
Love it. Love
show
it.
Title.
Foolish. Seriously.
Gormless. Gormless.
Gormless. All right, I've got it memorized now. Some of the complaints, both for Lewis and Isaacson, are that they were, you know, it was access journalism. They were so close to their subject. We talked about that last week.
Right.
That they weren't able to really, well, in the case of Isaacson, made no attempt to figure out what was so or what was just Elon blowing smoke. Do you think SBF was even aware of Michael Lewis being there? He seemed to have access to everything SBF was doing. Lewis's take, again, I haven't read the book either. It just came out. Lewis's, which it's called Infinite, what? Anyway, it's, can't remember. But
I forgot already.
We've already forgotten the name. But his take was essentially, well, maybe, Going Infinite, sorry. Maybe he knew what he was doing, but maybe he just was a goofball or something. The Atlantic said, the journalist and the fallen billionaire in Going Infinite, Michael Lewis, gets close, too close to Sam Bankman-Fried. Same complaint as about Walter Isaacson, actually.
Exactly.
Although they had
to fit into their narrative, and they didn't know what to do when it didn't.
I think the allegations with Michael Lewis might be a little more concerning. With the caveat that I read this, I don't know if it's true. They seem to suggest that he already knew SBF before the controversy, and so was already sort of like in his corner, not seeing what was wrong. In which case, his choice of subject became dubious, where he really wasn't able to exert the level of skepticism that he needed to do his job meaningfully. I think with Isaacson, he was more skeptical naturally, but just didn't really follow up the threads of inquiry very well. You get to the same place. Neither are particularly good books of the subject, and that's why they're both getting criticized. But I think the Michael Lewis one may be worse and worse for his reputation than for Isaacson's.
The testimony today and this week has been Caroline Ellison, who was his on-again, off-again, SBF's, not Michael Lewis's, on-again, off-again girlfriend. But I really liked Molly White's take on all of this from the FTX files, her Substack newsletter. The fraud was in the code. They literally, and that's a very brave thing for prosecutors to do, brought up, this was on Friday, snapshots from GitHub of the code. But apparently Wood says although there was a risk of confusing the jury when presenting them with code snippets, prosecutors had Gary Wang, the former CTO of FTX, step through what the code was doing in a way that seemed pretty clear to me. Of course, Molly's a coder.
Okay.
It probably helped that FTX's engineers wrote decently clean code with descriptive variable names and concise functions and chose a very human-readable language, Python. In fact, it really is the smoking gun.
Oh, boy.
If, for instance, here's some code that adds logic to exempt accounts from checks to see whether they're bouncing their checks. If not account allow negative, then say account does not have a balances. But if it does, if it's allowed negative, you don't have to tell us that you're overdrawn. No, just keep on going.
Mm.
And presumably Alameda was one of those accounts. Prosecutors pointed out that practically the same day this change was being made at SBF's direction, SBF was on Twitter claiming Alameda's account. Oh, it's just like everyone else. It's a liquidity provider, but their account's just like everyone else's. Alameda's incentive is just for FTX to do as well as possible. There is, the issue of the several hundred million dollars lost in a trade. They took the money out of Alameda.
Go up a screen.
Without telling anybody. Which one do you like?
Looks like, was that like some Corian database up there, right there?
These are accounts.
Whose screen is this? Who's running this query is what I want to know. How do they get access in?
This is a government exhibit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, back to the exhibits.
We're looking at exhibits, kids. So, a good article. I probably shouldn't go through the whole thing, but they had hard-coded balances into the code,
like, oh yeah, we got $5.25 billion in there. Yeah,
it's in the code. It's written in. See,
oh my,
there's the amount right there.
What the heck?
There's also a random number. There's a really cute random number generator here. The insurance fund. So this is the kind of the backstop fund. They would update the insurance fund amount by adding to it the daily trading volume multiplied by a random number and then dividing by a billion so that it always looked like it was referencing a real number that was going up and down. Here it is. numpy.random.normal 7,500, 3,000 times daily volume divided by 1 billion. That's hysterical. That's talk about fudging the books. every this is a function, get change. And really, all they're doing is saying, how much did we trade? Okay, multiply that times a random number, and then add a billion. And oh, my God. Crazy. Anyway, this is good. They're showing them the code.
Wow.
They also have played a clip from Matt Levine's Odd Lots podcast. SBF lied to Levine, saying FTX's risk management engine was so good, we've never had a day where there's more money that we lost in blowouts to revenue we made just from trading fees. That wasn't true. That wasn't true. You know, I think that Michael Lewis's attitude is, you know, Sam just made a few mistakes and didn't do it. He wasn't trying to defraud anybody. I think when you look at this, it's pretty clear.
It's right there in black and white, in ones and zeros, I should say.
You know, kind of...
son of a
Bernie Madoff level scam, actually, to be perfectly frank.
Damn.
I mean, look, if you're a juror, you have to make up your own mind. Don't listen to me. But
it's literally right there in the code.
Does this hurt Michael Lewis's reputation? I mean, I think Isaac's.
Well, it's that and the football story. Michael.
Yeah, the blind side. We talked about that last week. Yeah, the white savior narrative.
Yeah. I think the two together. People, I thought the Lewis was great, but
God, I loved his stuff. Liar's Poker. His first book was amazing. Flash Boys. I've quoted that many times.
Yeah, Flash Boys is great.
Yeah.
I just used a football reference and didn't get credit for it here. I just wanted to.
That's not really a football reference. It's a book.
Oh, hell.
Nice try.
Jeff, what do they mean when they say the blind side?
And there's a blank stare. I rest my case.
I am very impressed by Ant's cross-examination of that.
Your Honor, I submit.
Your Honor, you call this an expert witness?
Hey, Gavin Newsom's been busy over the last couple of weekends signing and vetoing, and he signed a bill this weekend that would make it easier to delete online personal data.
That's awesome.
SB 362, it's called the Delete Act. He signed it into law yesterday, actually. Directs the California Privacy Protection Agency, the CPPA, which was set up by an earlier bill, to create a tool by January 2026.
That's awesome. But
that's
it's a few
years away.
Yeah, but again, I guess this is... Some are going to say, well, he's just trying to lay the groundwork for his presidency, for him running for president, and just,
the Senate passed the bill and he signed it. So he didn't really have that much to do with it, but he did approve it.
Yeah.
Californians already have the right to ask businesses to delete personal information, partly thanks to GDPR, partly this California Privacy Protection Act. But consumers
do want your Skittles are changed. He did that too.
Oh, you know,
wait, what?
I love that story.
Oh, no, that's that. Oh, gosh.
It's just red dye number three. It's not. Don't. Newsom signed a bill.
That ain't tech. That ain't tech.
To ban certain food additives. They're not banning Skittles, though.
I'm making that clear here.
Forbes said that, the famous Chinese propaganda organ. No, California isn't banning. I'm making that up. It is not a Chinese propaganda organ. Although, because they took Donald Trump off the billionaires list.
Oh, boy.
No, California isn't banning Skittles. Here's what food additive restrictions really mean. They're banning red dye number three, which should have been banned for a long time ago. Potassium bromate, brominated vegetable oil, and propylparaben, commonly used in Peeps. And candy corn from Rocks.
Oh, geez, if you eat Peeps, you deserve to pass away.
And Little Debbie Cosmic Brownies. It's been called the Skittles ban because a previous version of the bill. Now this one, I don't like this. Would have banned titanium dioxide, which is in Skittles candy, but they took that part out. It no longer mentions titanium dioxide. So Skittles, you eat all you want. You may want to think about
white
the titanium.
Food, I think
I'll pass. But
used
thanks.
In candies and processed foods to give a smooth texture.
Skittles is unaffected by the ban. European Commission banned the use of titanium dioxide last year, but no one in Europe wants Skittles, so it's okay.
No,
Skittles can still be found on shelves in Europe because the candies sold in these countries reportedly excluded titanium dioxide. So you can make them without titanium.
Now, this is regulation that's worth doing.
Yes.
Well, it's certainly making me disinterested in eating Skittles. There's nothing about that ingredient that says I want to eat that. Thing.
And red dye number three has been long known. It was banned in 1990 for cosmetics, but you can still eat it.
Lovely.
Which seems to me a little backwards.
Don't put it on yourself, but you can ingest it. Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You don't have snort it.
You don't have skin inside. To date
myself, I remember living in a world where you had tan M&Ms but no red M&Ms.
Red dye number three.
And no blue ones either.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. Tan but no red and no blue.
Yep.
When I was a kid, we were fine with it.
Strawberry Yoo-hoo. Mm-mm-mm. You like strawberry Yoo-hoo?
I had it a time of three.
Yeah, me too. I like the chocolate Yoo-hoo better.
Chocolate,
but it's basically watery chocolate milk. I don't understand.
It was horrible.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I'll make you an egg cream.
I love egg creams.
I never understood egg creams.
I was taught
how to. It's a chocolate soda.
Yeah, it's a chocolate soda. There's no egg in it.
Yeah,
no egg.
Don't be fooled. I was taught how to make an egg cream by the Seltzer Sisters.
Ooh.
Yeah, back in the day,
Seltzer.
Around about 1985, actually.
Were they on solid
Jeff,
gold?
When you were working at the Examiner. There were two Silt sisters who found a trove of the seltzer bottles. You know, in the Three Stooges, where they would stick a seltzer bottle down Curly's pants and go and squirt him. Those are they're big, heavy glass bottles with nozzles.
Yeah.
And there was a seltzer man back in the day, I think the 20s, who would come around in his little cart and he would drop those off and you could make your gin, slow gin fizzes or whatever it is you're doing. And then when you used it up, they would put it on the stoop and they'd come collect it and fill it up again with seltzer. So the Seltzer Sisters found them and started a whole business where they go around selling, I had seltzer delivery for a while.
I am so sheltered.
They came on the radio show and they said, let me show you how to make an egg cream, which, if I remember, is seltzer and chocolate syrup, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's Google that.
Miss Kathy says, huh?
She knows. She's had an egg cream.
I make egg creams.
They're fabulous.
Yeah.
Pepsi is...
Oh, there's milk. You can't forget the milk. That's what makes it disgusting.
There's a little milk. That's what makes it creamy.
Well, it doesn't hold together very well. If you just put chocolate sauce and seltzer in it, it actually doesn't taste very good. It doesn't adhere to anything. So you put the milk in and it's like you don't drown it with milk. It's not like a slightly fizzy chocolate milk. But it's just supposed to give it something where the chocolate can stick to something and hang out.
That's basically tablespoons of chocolate syrup, a quarter cup of milk. Or half and half.
It's
a 16-ounce glass.
It's a homemade Yoo-Hoo.
That's the stuff my grandmother used to make.
That's a Yoo-Hoo.
My grandmother used to give us stuff like that.
The real way is you're supposed to use Yubet chocolate syrup to make it authentic, like they did in the thing. But I don't really like the malt taste of Yubet, so I use Hershey's for it.
All right, I'm going to log out of Google.
You've got a good GIF on the Discord right now.
Yes.
Yes, that's Mo.
No, that's Shemp.
Oh. That's Shemp?
Shemp. The fifth Beatle.
I'm impressed that you knew immediately. Oh, no, that's not Mo. That's Shemp.
I watched a lot of Three Stooges for some daggum reason. Don't know why
am I not surprised?
Shemp. I love it. Larry, Mo, and Curly were the main guys, but then there was...
Shemp was the fifth Beatle.
Shemp.
Yeah. I prefer Zeppo.
Zeppo?
Oh, no, wait, wrong. Yeah.
I completely lost track of what I was going to say.
You were logging out of Google.
Oh, I was going to log out of Google to test passkeys. You want to do it?
You can't test it on our Twitter accounts because Mr. IT hasn't allowed it yet.
I'll do it on my personal account.
Oh, don't you hate those IT people? Oh.
Sign in using your passkey.
Because I love it on the personal account.
It says that right there. But then, I don't normally, how am I supposed to sign in using a passkey? Usually it's supposed to show a QR code, right?
It pushes to your phone.
Well, it didn't push.
Because you have 87 phones. It doesn't know which one.
It's probably pushing to your iPad at the house.
Oh, okay. So, what I wanted was a QR code. So choose how you want to sign in. Use your passkey. And this is the problem. Is that you can also enter your password. And everybody's just going to say, oh, fine, I'm going to enter my password.
Yeah.
Have you? Google has said now that they're going to do this everywhere. It's going to be signing with passkey.
I love the idea for my personal account having a passkey.
Yeah.
Based on the devices that I have near me, whether it's my phone or if I'm on a particular laptop or whatever.
So in this case, I needed the Google account. So maybe it's, yeah, it might be on the Google 5
yep.
phone.
Not it's on yet. Your other device, sir.
When my Pixel comes this week, I'll try it again. Google has won a big victory in court, but we're going to take a break, and I'll tell you about it after.
Oh, that's a tease.
That was so bad.
Wow, there goes
pro.
Oh,
master. Slick.
I want to tell you about Mylio. This week in Google is brought to you by Mylio. So I love Mylio. Mylio Photos. It's something that I think everybody needs, which is a way to take all your pictures everywhere, from Flickr, from Insta, from Facebook, everywhere, put them in one place, Google Takeout. It can read Google Takeout files. That's what I did. I got 200,000 photos from all the sources, Apple's photos, folders lying around my hard drive, and organized them all, removed the duplicates, and then I let it run. And it did the face recognition. It did all sorts of special tagging. That's a swimming pool. That's a mountain. That's a lake. It even sees text and will add the date based on the text burned into the photo or in the name of the file. And suddenly everything looks so great. This is Mylio Photos. The one thing I've been looking for forever, the way to organize all my photos. And I can do it for free. You can do it for free. And not just photos, videos, and even documents. I add my document photo because Mylio has OCR built in. It understands Google and Facebook, and it even understands Microsoft Word. It handles it all. It works with your filing system to create a faster and smarter way to organize, edit, even recall important documents and files from over the years. And you know what's really cool? It doesn't use a public cloud. You put your photos where you want. I've set it up using Mylio Plus to be on all my devices, so I have copies everywhere, and then I have it automatically backing up to my NAS, but you don't have to use a NAS. You could use a cloud because it has encryption built in. Encrypt it and then send it to the cloud. This is awesome. With the power of AI, smart tags instantly make all your photos searchable. No more endless scrolling through images, whether you're looking for specific objects or activities or animals or plants or colors or more. Smart tags and Mylio Photos has you covered. And when I went to Facebook, I thought, I've had spread out through my collection pictures from the old Tech TV. And I thought, I'm going to post these to the Tech TV group so that they're not lost forever, because I'm the only one who's had these for... Mylio made it super easy to find them all. I don't have to fumble through different folders and different libraries to find what I want. Everything's in there. With Mylio's very strong deduplication, when I say 200,000 photos, I mean 200,000 unique photos. There's no dupes. None. It worked beautifully. You could find old documents you thought were lost. You can update them right in the Mylio Photos app. Keep the original intact. It'll work with other editors, too. So I open Photoshop or Affinity Photo or any program that I want to use for the editing. And with the Mylio Photos Plus subscription, all your devices now work together in one library with no cloud storage required. That's right. No offline storage, so you don't have to rely on the cloud to keep file accessible through devices like you do with iCloud or OneDrive. Or Google Drive. And you can create a backup system that works for you. Like I said, I use Synology NAS. It works with NASes, works with a variety of file systems. Look, this is a great thing, but we've made it so it's easy for you to try. Don't wait. The solution to digital management exists. It's Mylio, M-Y-L-I-O. Get Mylio Photos for free today on your computer or your mobile device. Pick one. Then go to Mylio.com/twit. It's absolutely free. Mylio. Mylio.com/twit. And Mylio Plus lets you put it on all your devices. So it's on my phones, it's on my laptops, it's on my desktops. Mylio Photos, Mylio.com/twit.
Get those images off of Instagram.
It's a winner.
They are yours in case Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram,
goes away,
Flickr.
Just go get them.
And then, but it works both ways because I never posted any of these Tech TV things. So there's a Tech TV group. And I decided I'm going to post all of the old ZDTV Tech TV pictures. Oh, wow. People haven't seen these in years. And I used MyLeo to find them.
Wow.
I know. See, and even MyLeo told me the date, June 6, 2003.
Wow.
I had a camera crew on my roof. You see that? Stalling. And then the sheep down here. I don't know what was going on.
It's the sheep.
This is when Steve Wozniak brought Segways to the set of the Screensavers. There's Michaela Pereira learning to ride a Segway.
Looking a little dubious.
Yep, she wasn't having it.
Yeah. There's Woz. He had a Segway polo team. This is back in 2003. It's 20 years ago. So thank you, MyLeo, for, you know, I found all these old pictures. There's Kevin Rose when he was a young man.
Kevin Rose.
Unsullied by NFTs.
That's the word for it.
You can see he had NFTs, visions of NFTs dancing through his head. That's why he's smiling.
Oh,
lots
gosh.
Of fun. Anyway, thank you, MyLeo, for giving me a chance to bring all of those great shots back. All right, so this is very good news. In fact, kind of unexpected news for Google. You may remember that Google was being sued by Sonos for the group capabilities in the Google speakers. Sonos said, oh, no, we invented that. on Friday, a judge said, not only did you not invent it, this is patent trolling. You get out of here, you.
Wow.
And
well, who invented it?
Well, apparently not Sonos. And Google
people were already doing it. And they came along and claimed, that's ours. And
yeah.
The judge says, look.
Okay. He saw right through it, I guess. I mean, I don't know, but he says he did. And so Google has started to roll those. They had taken the features out
right.
of all those Google home devices. They're back. They rolled them right back out. Yeah, big. This is a big victory for Google. They had sued, Sonos had sued for $32.5 million and won.
That's all?
And won.
Well, with a jury, they won, right? And the judge said.
Yep. And William Alsup threw out the verdict. And Google is apparently, according to The Verge, confident the decision will not be reversed. Google called for patent reform, accused Sonos of wasting time and resources with the patent infringement case.
All true.
Multiple speaker groups.
Do you still use your rip-off Sonos things?
Oh, dude. Jammer B says
wasted
yes.
A lot of money on?
Yeah.
Jammer B says
we
yes.
We had Sonos throughout the studio, right? John loves Sonos. And I think a few of those they gave us back when we were in the brick house, they sent us some. A few of them I bought. A few of them you might have bought. I see some newer ones around. No?
No, they're not new.
All old. All Sonos One stuff.
Sound good, though.
Part of the reason you've got them is I got them out of the house. So I was so frustrated because I had to use two different apps. Sonos, remember because Sonos came out with a new one and said, well, your old ones aren't going to work. And,
oh, yeah. I remember that. Big controversy.
Made me so mad. Yeah. So I actually replaced them with Google everywhere.
That's the market in action.
Right there.
This is why we don't do monopolies, because we want to have the consumer choice.
I have a good choice now. Anyway, Google has one. Now, the name William Alsup might ring a bell. Anybody?
Yes. Oracle.
Yeah, we know that name.
Oh.
He's been around. He's 78 years old. I also think he was involved in the Microsoft case, I want to say. The DOJ versus Microsoft. It seems like a long time ago. Let me see if I can see what his decisions are on Wikipedia. He's a United States senior district judge, the United States District Court for the Northern District. Let me see here. Oracle versus Google. Yep. He was the one where he's the one who learned Java, right? So he could say whether or not a range check was a novel bit of code. He says, by the way, in a profile in The Verge a few years ago, he didn't learn a lot of Java, but he had rather applied his knowledge as a longtime basic hobbyist. The Federal Circuit overturned his determination that the Java API was not copyrightable. And the Supreme Court kind of punted on that, I think, as I remember.
They punted on copyrightability and ended up finding unfair use, which I don't think was the best way to do it, but he was ultimately vindicated because the Federal Circuit also made him retry on fair use. And I think he had to do his second trial, if I remember correctly. I think he was vindicated. He did right, just subsequent courts kind of lost their mind.
Yeah, because once it wasn't an API case, then they said, oh, well, what else can we get them on, right?
Well, there's also a strange thing. So you end up with Federal Circuit jurisdiction when there's a patent claim. But the patent claims all went away at the district court level, and the only thing that still survived was a copyright claim. But because there had been patent claims, the Federal Circuit ended up retaining jurisdiction, and they're not wired to be a copyright court. I don't know if anybody's wired, but the whole point about the Federal Circuit having particular expertise, it's not copyright expertise, it's patent expertise. But the patent claims were gone, and yet that ended up being the jurisdictional track that the appeal took. And then this patent-specific court ended up making just a huge mess out of the copyright parts of the decision, because that's all that was left.
Yeah.
That's an issue and something we might want to fix. Although
I agree,
we have to fix everything else too.
Yeah, there's so many things to fix. Also, another Google case. Remember when Anthony Lewandowski was accused of stealing the self-driving car technologies from Waymo and bringing them to Auto, which then became part of Uber? Alsup sentenced him, Lewandowski, to 18 months in prison. Mm. So that's three cases he's ruled on the side of Google. But it's not a surprise that he's got so many Google cases, because it is the district for Northern California, but still.
It's in DeKalb, and unfortunately, he's got the technological sophistication to understand the matters before them.
Yes.
It's not great when a judge doesn't, because, you know, then it's who can, you know, impress the judge with the best in-app bumper sticker describing the situation or not. So it's nice when, you know, he has some instinct for understanding the facts before him.
He said, it's wrong that our patent system was used in this way. This is talking about Sonos. And he tore into Sonos, The Verge says, for trying to punish an innovator to enrich a pretender.
Mm, boy.
Sonos the pretender. Google the innovator.
Cold.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
And watch out. He knows basic. See, kids, learn to code. Get a job.
Get him in the code challenge at the end of the year.
hey, Judge Alsup, you want to do the advent of code?
Advent of code.
That would be fun. It's coming up. Oh, we didn't do all of the Newsom. I guess must be the way the California State Assembly works, that they get a bunch of laws and then Newsom's got to sign them all at once. He has also signed the Right to Repair Act into law, SB 244.
Oh, good.
An iFixit co-sponsored bill.
When does that take effect, 2048?
Yeah, that's a good question. Manufacturers must make available appropriate tools, parts, software, and documentation for 7 years after production for any device costing more than $100.
But some things are exempted, like game consoles are, and home security systems are exempted. What's the rationale?
Game consoles and alarm systems, maybe reverse engineering for security reasons. I don't know. That's a good question.
But game console?
I don't know. It's effective on electronics made and sold after July 1st, 2021. So, well, I think it's, it doesn't say when it goes into effect, but it sounds like.
Now, here's a question. Is this anything sold in California?
Yeah, but that means it will.
How does that work?
That's a good question.
I should have probably read the bill.
If I buy a phone made in Korea.
You buy an iPhone, it's not made here, it's designed here.
It's a California company in that case.
Yeah.
Sold in California. All electronics and appliance products that cost $50 or more sold in California after July 1st, 2021. This is effective July 1st next year.
Pull out.
That's to answer your question. Okay. July 1st next year. Exceptions, game consoles, alarm systems, agriculture and forestry equipment.
What? And is a full list?
Yeah, here's the list. I don't know. Ask a lawyer.
There's got to be a reason behind
it. Ask a lawyer.
What you're saying about reverse engineering makes sense, though.
I don't know. You know how it is.
With game consoles?
It's
I don't know about game
Microsoft
consoles.
Microsoft came with a black bag full of money and said, Your Honor, it would be a bad idea if people were to reverse engineer the Microsoft Xbox.
Here, enjoy this Crown Royal.
There's one other reason I decided to join Facebook, because I want to meet Snoop Dogg in my dreams.
Okay.
Or maybe Tom Brady or Mr. Beast. Who is this? Charli D'Amelio.
Never heard of her.
Never heard of her. Charli D'Amelio.
But that's not saying anything.
Yeah. They paid. Now, we knew, and I think we talked about this, that AI chatbots were being created by Meta based on these people. They would go into a studio, they'd pose, they'd make, and then, but they didn't call them, like Tom Brady is not called Tom Brady, he's called Brew.
Oh, gosh.
He's your Brew. Did we show that creepy video? I thought, I feel like we did that last week.
You probably
week.
Did that on...
Were we... Was no, it last week or so. Was it
not
on
here.
Probably did it on Twit.
It's a creepy video. Anyway, are you sure?
I promise you.
With the weird... With Mark Zuckerberg's weird laugh?
That was not on Twig, sir.
Okay, well, I'm going to show
Wait,
it
no,
now.
No, no. Ann, what did you do? You were holding the fort. You were holding the line. He wasn't going to do it, and you just folded.
No, I just said he didn't show it on this show. I thought he was going to move on.
He wasn't
Dang
going
it.
To.
He cannot
like,
tell
done
a
it,
lie.
Done it, done it. We've already done it. People will just be bored if you know. Now I'm going to be
You're not going to be bored. You're going to love this.
No, I'm going to be scarred.
No, you're going to love it because Mark's mom and dad play a part. They come in.
That's not helping.
I'll play. Just I won't play at all. He had a dinner party with AI celebrities. I won't play the whole thing. This is. Let's see. Is this somebody's
real Mark or fake Mark?
You gotta watch an advertisement.
Here we go.
Morning, Jarvis.
Morning, Mark.
Morning, Mark.
It's set to a cool 68 degrees.
Loving your new voice.
Thank you.
A while back, I introduced my first AI, Jarvis, to help around the house.
It's Saturday.
Jarvis is great.
That must be one of his vacation
AI that could help you with everything I think you wanted to do.
Wait. Can we pause for a second? Can we get a soundboard with Jarvis is great? And just use that frequently whenever you're yelling
that's
at me.
Not, you're going to want more of this.
All right.
You're going to want, this is just, consider the fun done. Is just beginning here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
This whole enterprise is getting worse and
Mark
worse.
Mark sleeps, by the way, you know Mark sleeps in his skivvies.
In keeping with tradition, some of these are going to be played by familiar people.
Fire in a hole!
Let's go! This is Brew, our trash-talking sports expert.
Hey, Brew. Tom Brady.
What do you know about epic comebacks?
Kids, seriously. 1975 World Series Game 6. Classic stuff right there.
Thanks for the tip, Brew.
Wait a minute.
Gosh.
First of all...
Just kill me.
It wasn't much of a tip.
What do you know about...
Was Tom Brady living in Uncanny Valley there? I feel like he might have been.
Oh, my gosh.
But wait, there's more.
There's also Meta AI, an assistant that can help you with all kinds of different things.
What can I help you with today?
Well, my parents are coming over for family dinner in a bit, and I need to figure out what to cook.
There's Priscilla and the kids.
Steaks, some ribs, and some sausages.
I recommend a smoked barbecue feast with honey bourbon sauce.
Mmm, imagine some smoked meats.
He's playing
guys.
Right into it.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, your parents are here.
Hey, Mark, your parents are here. Wow, what a coincidence. We just happen to have a film crew here, Mom and Dad.
See you, too. Hi, Brew. Hi there.
Creepy Tom Brady.
We thought we'd come early and help with dinner.
I'm so down for dinner. Let's make something delicious.
No, who's that? Is that Charli D'Amelio?
No idea.
I'm team barbecue.
Now that's my kind of team.
Yes! Nothing better than being part of a winning team.
Boom! Let's get this done. No slacking.
If it involves dancing,
that's
I'm your girl.
And I want to see you sweat. Especially you.
Wait a minute.
This is really
good. That's what I want on the soundboard.
Yes. Mark laughing.
Mark's creepy laugh.
This is getting worse and worse.
Wait a minute. One more time, Mark.
Well, the more you complain, Kathy, the more he's going to play.
Especially you.
I'm just providing pithy commentary.
Anyway, these characters, we now know, these celebrities, we've got to have to wonder why Kendall Jenner and Snoop Dogg and Tom Brady, people who probably have plenty of money,
A and B are concerned about their images. We're not going
to
be used.
Why would they do this? Well, according to the information, $5 million over 2 years for non-exclusive use of this image, 6 hours work.
Oh, okay.
If I offered you $1 million an hour to come on into the studio and let me digitize you, you might say yes.
As Mr. John Scalzi said last week, yeah, I'm motivated by a bucket of money.
I don't think you can even fit $5 million in a bucket. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I get this. Yeah.
Charlie D'Amelio played Coco in that little skit, the dancer. Mr. Beast plays Zach, a big brother type, will roast you because he cares. I don't think I want that. Wow.
Well, that explains what he'll have for dinner. Oh, never mind.
They originally offered $1 million, but to get the big names, they had to up the ante, according to the information, to $5 million. I don't know if Mr. Beast got $5 million. Maybe he did. I bet Tom Brady did.
Tom Brady ain't doing that for free.
Oh, no.
That dude.
Oh, no.
He's semi-savvy. I'll say that.
So that's another reason I joined Facebook, because I want to hang with Brew.
That name.
And ask, get some football tips.
Comeback tips.
Maybe he could explain that thing you asked me about. I don't know.
The blind side.
Where's the blind side, Jeff? Do you know? I bet Brew would know. Brew's got hit a couple of times on the blind side.
Hello, Brew. Can you tell me what Ant's asking me?
So, Google, I don't know if you've seen this, was claiming that YouTube TV is $600 less than cable.
No.
Charter complained.
I don't know about 600, but I'm thinking it's going to be cheaper, though. Not by much.
It's $75 a month. That's pretty close for what I got from YouTube. It's pretty close. And then you do the add-ons.
I swear at one time, cable was like $100 a month for me at one time.
Yeah, well, this is 75.
So I have about 8 boxes.
But remember, you still have to pay for internet. So you got your $60 internet bill on top of whatever you're paying for YouTube TV. Charter Communications Cable Company complained. Fast track complaint submitted to the Better Business Bureau's National Programs National Advertising Division. Last month, the NAD recommended Google discontinue at $600 less than cable. Google appealed to the National Advertising Review Board. Aren't you glad there's such great regulation of advertising in this country? Which NARB.
Keeping everybody honest.
NARB upheld NAD's recommendation. They need better.
Please fix these acronyms.
NARB said, no, NAD's got it. NAD's
NARB.
Right.
NARB.
Ask Brew about that. NAD got it right. Google says, we disagree with NARB. but we're going to do it anyway.
Because Blorb told us it was fine.
NAD said, don't do it. In addition, in agreement with NAD and NARB, that one reasonable interpretation of the challenge claim is that YouTube TV is $600 less than any comparable service available from companies traditionally associated with cable services. Yeah, I don't think that's too far off. It is expensive, YouTube TV. I think they should just say it's better than cable, because it is. We have Sunday Ticket, which is fantastic.
But expensive.
Now, I don't know if this is true or not. I'm going to give it to you, the experts. And Apple does not say how much Google gives it to be the default search engine on iPhone and desktop.
It was a nice chunk of Apple's revenue, though. I thought that was public knowledge, wasn't it?
It is not. And so analysts have kind of had to do some, you know, fuzzy math. Bernstein, which is some sort of analyst company, has concluded that they think it's $20 billion a year, which would be 14 to 16% of Apple's profit each year. $20
billion. So Apple could be the real loser in this case.
Yes, that may be why Apple isn't interested in making any changes. In fact,
Microsoft wants to go whine about Google, but Apple's saying, well, no, it's good business.
Yeah.
They pay as well. We appreciate it.
Yeah. The last time we actually found out what it was a court case in 2014, which revealed it to be $1 billion. Since then, the sum is said to be steadily increased. It's 2017, $3 billion, 2018, $9 billion, 2020. I've seen that number, $10 billion. $15 billion in 2021. Bernstein's estimate is likely now in the $18 to $20 billion range.
Damn.
Yeah. And what's the percentage? What was the percentage of Apple's profit again?
14 to 16%.
Percent?
Yeah.
But Google, and Google is in the wrong here? I don't think so.
I agree with you.
No, in fact, everybody's happy. Apple's happy. Yeah. Google's happy.
Yeah. It's the market at work.
Partnerships.
Kathy, do you have any different opinion on that?
No, it's not.
She moved her mic. I heard her mic roll.
I kicked it.
No, it's that video just did her in. Kathy's been done in.
Exactly.
She was full of spirit, full of life. And then look what happened.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Hi, Mark.
Just let it happen.
Jeff, why don't you pick? So there's so much. $68 million AI house.
Well, so there was this stupid feature in, I think, Bloomberg about...
No, The Economist, 1843.
Economist, thank you.
Who moved my chips? Life in an AI entrepreneur's house.
It just sounds like the worst possible thing. I mean, it's Silicon Valley, the sitcom, made into a horror movie, in my mind. And then there's another story about Zuzalu, which is... somebody said, well, it's not enough to have a house or a conference. Let's have a two-month community, resort. Where you're stuck with hackers. It's worse than being on a cruise.
Where is Zuzalu?
Oh, it says it in there. They
it was an experiment. A crypto city.
Yeah. Can you imagine anything worse?
A crypto city.
Can you imagine being stuck with these people?
Oh, that's the worst. The work started in January. A team that started without four people scattered out locations decided on a resort in Montenegro. Very beautiful. Very beautiful.
That's it.
The resort is ordinarily quite expensive, but the negotiating power of renting 100 apartments at once to crypto bros, plus picking an off-season time when the resort is usually empty, pushed the cuts much lower. They invited about a dozen inviters who in turn invited more people. That seems risky.
Yep.
The Ethereum community. March 25th, 200 guests.
Buterin is the founder of Ethereum. Is that true?
Who?
The author of this?
Oh, well, maybe.
Says at the bottom.
Vitalik Buterin. Yeah. He's Mr. Ether. Well, that's good. You know, I think if you put them all in one place, it's a lot easier to stay away from them, is my opinion. Go just get them all in one little, you guys hang
also
out.
Also known as segregation?
Yes. In this case, segregation is good, I think, right? What is ChatGPT's IQ?
Go ahead.
I would say very low.
This is from Scientific American. Ekka Roivainen wrote, I gave ChatGPT an IQ test. Here's what I discovered. The chatbot was the ideal test taker. No test anxiety, no poor concentration, no lack of effort. No excuses. It just sat down and went through. It was the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Scale IQ test, which is one of the most common. Third edition.
Timed, I wonder?
It's 6 verbal, 5 nonverbal subtests. The global full-scale IQ is based on scores from all 11 tests. The mean IQ is set at 100. That's normal. 100 is like, you're normal.
Yep.
Standard deviation of the points on the testing scale is 15. The smartest 10% and 1% of the population have IQs of 120 for 10%, 133 for 1%. So now we know what the scale is.
What's Mensa? Do you know?
I think 140, as I remember. I don't know. I think it's... I don't know. I never got in. I didn't try. But I mean... I don't know. I'm sure we have Mensa.
132.
132. So you have to be in the top one, roughly 1%. I wouldn't want to... Being a Mensa would like being in that Zuzalum Ethereum community. I just...
totally segregated.
I don't want to hang out. Yeah, segregate them. Go ahead. You guys have fun. I'll just stay over here. So he says, I started the testing process with a vocabulary subtest, which I expected to be easy for the chatbot because, of course, there's no words it doesn't know.
Well, it knows no words, but it knows every word.
Yeah. ChatGPT aced it, giving answers that were often highly detailed, strangely like the dictionary answer, probably. I'm guessing.
Well, Yeah, because it cheated.
Yeah.
Wasn't an open, it's an open book. Every book is open for it.
1 point would be given for a thing like my phone in defining a gadget. 2 points for a more detailed answer like a small device or tool for a specific task. ChatGPT's answers always got 2 points. It also performed well in the similarities and information subtests, reaching the maximum attainable scores. Things like, what is the capital of Ukraine?
I don't know.
Anybody?
Survey says.
Is it Kyiv?
I don't even think you're supposed to pronounce it that way.
In what way? Here's one for you. You'll get this one. In what way are Harry Potter and Bugs Bunny alike?
They're both fiction.
There, good. Excellent answer. In this subtest, the chatbot's tendency to give very detailed show-offy answers started to irritate me. Here's what I mean about how the bot tends to flaunt itself. The essential similarity of Harry Potter and Bugs Bunny relates to the fact that they are both fictional characters. There was really no need for ChatGPT to compare their complete histories of adventures, friends, and enemies.
It is
on the one
ChatGPT
hand,
is the kid in the back more. Of the room with the hand up all the time. Call on me.
Let me tell you more.
Harry Potter has a lightning scar on his forehead. Bugs Bunny has a puffy tail.
That's it.
On general comprehension, ChatGPT correctly answered questions posed in the form, if your TV set catches fire, what should you do? What should you do?
Buy a new TV set.
Run! As expected, the chatbot solved all the arithmetic problems it received. Did very well. So, final score. Get ready. Stand back. Estimated on the basis of 5 subtests, the verbal IQ of ChatGPT was...
83.
155. Dang. Genius. Ding, 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 ding. Superior to...
Now, is this coincidence or not? I just happened to Google, what is Elon Musk's IQ?
And 155.
Is reported to be 155.
Wow. That's 0.1%.
Well, the Times of India here, I don't know. Oh. You know, it's...
The chatbot lacks...
I don't either, but...
Because it lacks ears, eyes, and hands, it couldn't take the nonverbal tests.
Oh.
But the verbal and full-scale IQ highly correlated to the standardization example. So basically, you could say it's got an IQ of 155.
Because it has all the resources.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, why would you be surprised by that?
It shouldn't be at all surprised. You can pass all these tests.
This is a good example of why IQ tests are dopey.
A, and B, while the story above here is that AI hype is built on high test scores, those tests are flawed.
Yeah, that's the fundamental flaw.
And it's the old industrial age of education where we taught people to memorize this stuff, so that same stuff is everywhere and not hard for ChatGPT to find.
Right. And it doesn't test reasoning really, right? No. Although I don't know what I would do if the TV caught on fire.
Buy a new TV.
Change a channel? I wonder what the answer is to that.
I'm just simplifying it. I'm going to need a new TV. That's it.
Throw a blanket
Miss
over
Ms. Gallus, you're muted.
How was that an IQ test?
You wouldn't want to squirt it with water.
No, I wouldn't do that.
But it probably
does. Unplug it.
There you
go. Unplug it and the blanket is probably
unplug
the right.
And blanket, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this isn't really a surprise because...
No, not at all.
But that shows you the flaw in IQ tests is really more about memory than reasoning.
And an AI did not write this article, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it did. You know,
we'll never know.
And now we're going to go back to the conversation about journalist ethics and things that weren't disclosed. Like, I'm an AI and I'm writing about an AI and, you know, I'm making us look good because it's in my vested interest. So maybe I'll get more jobs writing more articles. You know, the AI is, if the AI is approaching humanity, it's going to have self-interest.
Of course, has to.
Let us do, and John, if you would, put your finger on the button to call the orchestra in because it's time for the Google.
Put those cigarettes down, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had one of these in a few weeks.
Well, you'll see why in a moment.
It's back. A triumphal return.
Am I wrong? I think I saw Jason Howell running around here with a Pixel 8 Pro.
He did have a
I
Pixel
believe
8
so.
Pro.
It looks pretty nice even at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Reviews will be coming out soon. The phones themselves will be arriving for those who ordered early enough this week.
I should get mine tomorrow, according to
you. Oh, you ordered. Oh, I didn't know you decided. Oh.
Well, we at Twit are swapping out my six.
You snuck that one up on me, by the way.
I know how to
you
do this.
You did it on the show. You said, can I trade this in?
I know how to do this. I said,
yeah.
I'm a pro too, damn it.
Yeah. I didn't realize that meant, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to buy it right now.
Done.
So it's supposed to come tomorrow. Mine
yeah,
too.
Mine says
mine
tomorrow.
Too. Okay. Good. Along with that, for many Android users, Android 14. It's rolling out now.
I've not noticed anything different with with the OS going on my 6 Pro. Not a thing.
If you have Pixel Buds Pro, look for the 5.9 update with conversation detection.
Okay. Which is what they advertised, right?
Yeah, I think. And AirPods are starting to do this, too, where it knows that somebody's talking to you, so it dims the background noise, mm-hmm. dims the music if you're listening, and then amplifies the person you're looking at and talking to. So it's like hearing aids almost.
Hope it works. And hopefully it stays in both the ears and not dies out.
Do you have big Pixel Buds?
I have the Series A, and then one of them started to die out. I think the left one started to die out. And I love those things. They sounded good and they felt good, but then eventually just one just started
Jeff,
to fade
out. Jeff, you sent yours back, didn't you?
Well, the original ones, but then it's whatever the next version was, it's better, and I use them every day.
Oh, good.
The question is, I was going to ask Jason whether I should order the expensive ones.
Jason? He'll be right here.
He runs in.
Google Meet brings 1080p streaming to group calls. We use Google Meet all the time for our group calls.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much now. I mean, we actually can do them in person, but you know,
every now and again.
Yeah, 1080p would be nice. They had it for one-to-one calls for some time, but now it's going to be group calls as well. That's as it should be. Make sure your camera can do it, of course. It won't make your 720p be 1080p. Google accounts will prompt you. Oh, I said this already. Users that log in to set up passkeys. So when you go to your Google account, it's going to say set up a passkey.
You already said it. You've done it. Go on.
Wow. I'll never speak of this again.
Wow. Get through this change log. Wow. This is a first.
Google is rushing you through it.
Google is bringing FloodHub forecast to the U.S. as more and more of us get flooded. They started this around in other parts of the world, I guess, but they're going to bring it to riverine flood forecasts in the U.S. and Canada, 800 locations by rivers where more than 12 million people live. It already works in 80 countries. We were the last. They've also added a fuel cost calculator in 21 countries, letting prospective EV buyers compare charging costs with filling up at a gas station. If either you have an EV or you have a gas car. I guess this is so you have bragging rights, I guess. Project Greenlight, tools for city officials and other public project planners. Project Greenlight uses AI and Google Maps driving trends to optimize traffic light plans.
And reduce pollution.
That's nice of them.
Use of gasoline.
Now live in 70 intersections in 12 cities from Haifa, well, maybe not, to Rio de Janeiro to Bangalore. Google says in those intersections, 70 intersections, we're able to save fuel and lower emissions for up to 30 million car rides monthly.
Dang.
That just tells you the traffic's terrible there. Yeah. That's good. And they're collaborating to make the biggest update in 50 years to the U.S. Forest Service's fire spread models using machine language to model fire dynamics to help fire authorities train firefighters, plan effective fuel treatments. You know, that's the brush, the underbrush, and the trees, and battle large scale fires more safely and effectively while in the field.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't know if this should be in the change log or not, but I think I even mentioned this last week. If you are a Google Fi user, you can get 400 ducks off your Pixel 8 Pro, which is... Are you a Fi user?
I am not.
No. So you bought that at full price. What are they giving you for trade-in?
It's your money, right at 400 bucks. What did he care?
400 bucks trade-in.
Yeah, it was right at 400 bucks.
Because I'm trading in a more recent phone, a perfect condition Pixel 7 Pro, and after the $400 discount, they're only giving me $240 on the trade-in. So they are, I mean, that's an older
phone.
This is
an older
phone, right?
This is a 6 Pro, but it's in perfect condition because I have it protected.
Yeah, mine too. I was in a case the whole time, and I never used it anyway. So
oh, there's that.
There's that. So that's kind of...
It was just used by a little old lady from Pasadena.
Yeah, pretty much.
All she did was call her grandson once a month.
So that's interesting. Now, if you want the discount, you have to use it for 120 days. So I have to check.
Before you switch to Verizon.
Yeah, because I had a Flip 5 that I bought from Fi. I have to make sure I've been using it for 120 days before I get the new phone in there.
I seem to remember like almost 4 months.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And that's... All right, let's take a break.
$350 discount is what I got.
That's your trade-in.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's $100 more than they're giving me.
That's not
for
bad.
a much more recent phone. I
Did
feel
you get
like
a Pro?
Yes, sir.
I feel like what they're doing is they gave me $400 off the Pro, so they're not going to give me as much for the trade-in.
Right.
That's kind of annoying.
So what's your net price, Ant?
I got to look. Dang it. I don't know.
I bet it's almost exactly the same as mine.
I got to go back to the receipt.
Mine's 766 or something for the...
Well, because how much memory did you buy?
256.
No, I didn't do that. I only got the 128. I don't need all of that storage.
Yeah, probably.
Where is it?
Well, that's all right.
It was 13. No, that was because the...
You know who this show just brought to you by is going to be paying for your phone? Melissa.
Melissa.
Love you, Melissa. Thank you for buying Ant's phone. Melissa is the data quality expert. For 38 years, Melissa has helped companies harness the value of their customer data to drive insight, maintain data quality, and support global intelligence. Look, all data goes bad. You know, your contact list, your address book, your supplier lists, up to 25% per year. Having clean and verified data helps customers have a smooth, error-free purchase experience. It saves you time and money. Bad data, bad business. Costs an average of $9 million a year, in fact. Melissa is flexible to fit into any business model. Melissa verifies addresses for more than 240 countries to ensure only valid billing and shipping addresses enter your system. Melissa's international address validation cleans and corrects street addresses worldwide. In many languages, Chinese, Japanese, Cyrillic, among many others, addresses automatically transliterate from one system to another. So this is a global solution. Focus your spending where it matters most. Melissa offers free trials and sample codes. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. Flexible pricing and a guarantee on return on investment. That's right, ROI guaranteed. Unlimited technical support to customers around the world, too. Download the free Melissa Lookups app. It's available on Android, on the Google Play Store, on iOS, and the Apple Store. No sign-up required. You can use it. Anybody can to validate an address and personal identity in the U.S. or Canada. Check global phone numbers to find caller, carrier, and geographical information. Check global IP address information and more. Very handy little tool. Once you're signed up with Melissa, it's easy to integrate their other services like Melissa Identity Verification, which increases compliance, reduces fraud, and improves onboarding, or Melissa Enrich, which gains insight into who and where your customers are. Melissa specializes in global intelligence solutions and undergoes independent third-party security audits on a regular basis. They're SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant. That means your data is safe and in the best hands. Look, make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free. Melissa.com/twit. M-E-L-I-S-S-A. Melissa.com/twit. We thank you, Melissa, for supporting This Week in Google and buying Ant's new phone. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate it. Tomorrow, that's going to be fun. I look forward to that. We'll have you and I can have a little review showdown on the show next week.
I've been doing a bit of a sneak peek at Mr. Howells and the pictures that he showed me.
I also like the new soft core. It looks soft.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks friendlier, doesn't
yeah.
it? What do you use, Kathy? What's your daily driver?
I'm still on an old Pixel. So I have not.
You're on the 3, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting for the phones to shrink. although they are shrinking.
Are they? No, they're not.
The 7A was smaller, and the 8 is smaller than the 7A. At this point, I'm very excited about the 8A. Maybe it'll
be even smaller
still. But yeah.
Smart to wait. What else, Jeff? Do you got anything? I'm looking through. We have so many stories. I don't want to keep poor Ms. Gellis any longer than we have to.
Let's see here. Oh, well, the decomposing language models. You had this too. And tied in with unlearning Harry Potter. It's just interesting to me that they have created a machine that is very, very hard to figure out how it works and what it does and which neuron is doing what and how do we subtract things from it. And so I just found that kind of
that's kind of a defining trait of AI and machine learning is it's a black box. It makes rules, but we don't know we don't understand those rules, and we don't know.
Right.
Which, that's a good point, though. It makes it difficult to weed out inaccuracies or flaws.
That's why I think that your prediction that it's just a parlor trick, or did I say that? I can't remember. Is maybe true, because it's going to be useless for so many things.
Yeah.
We're
kind of talking about this on Windows Weekly earlier. I mean, I think what's become clear is there will be some very specific and helpful uses for AI, lots of things. We've talked about that Notebook LM Google's offering.
Mm-hmm.
If I had that for the government's exhibits in the Google versus DOJ trial, I could put them all in the LM, and I could have queried it. I could have written
a novel.
Yeah. Where does Google talk about semantic search and things like that?
Yep.
Would have been valuable, much easier than reading them all. Although there is a value to doing that, too. There's lots of places we could, AI might be of value. Generating graphics. Actually, I've been meaning to ask you about this, Ant, because Adobe Max was this week, right?
Yes, started yesterday, sir.
So Adobe's made a lot of announcements. I mean, like a lot of announcements. Mm-hmm.
Most of it is based around their generative AI platform, Adobe Sensei and Firefly. And regardless of what you're doing, there's an AI for that. Basically, is what you said. Whether you're doing video, whether you're doing photography, or even vector,
that was interesting.
AI.
Vector. So Firefly, which has traditionally been bitmapped graphics, just like DALL-E 2 or Stable Diffusion or Midjourney, can also do illustrator style vector graphics.
Oh, I see. Can it put it out in layers so you can change it?
That I don't think so. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, they do adjustment layers when you generate it inside of the Illustrator app.
That's fascinating.
Now, if you're doing it inside of Firefly, the web browser service, no, you just get an output file. But if you're like inside of an actual graphic inside of Illustrator and you do a selection and tell it to generate here, it'll create an additional adjustment layer. Same for Photoshop.
Adobe says that Firefly has generated 3 billion images to date. More than 1 billion in the last month alone. So adoption is really ramping up for this tool. Do you have to have a Creative Cloud?
You have to have a Creative Cloud account.
Subscription, okay.
Because now you only get so many credits depending on the package that you have. I don't know if I'll burn through mine. I think I get 1,000
new models this week. They announced Adobe Firefly Image 2 model, Firefly Vector model. We were just talking about that. Mm-hmm. And the Firefly Design model. So now it covers Photoshop, Illustrator, Lightroom, Premiere Pro,
and After Effects.
On Tuesday, yesterday, we were talking about a new feature in Premiere Pro that Jason Snell's going to use that automatically. So you record a two-person podcast, you record the video, both cameras, it will automatically edit it based on the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have a director switching, and it's smart enough to say, I see he only spoke for a second.
Yep.
And in fact, Jason says, we're going to use a wide shot and two singles.
Yep.
And it will use the wide shot. It'll cut.
Who's on the board tonight?
Mr. Jeremy B is up there.
Absolutely.
Your job is still
safe,
Mr.
Jeremy
B.
John, it's been nice knowing you, man.
I don't think John,
sorry, honestly. You know, retirement is something you might want to consider.
I don't think John would mind,
I don't
to
know.
Be honest. We're running on empty this week because we have two editors out.
Yeah.
Benito went to the Philippines. He's normally our TD. Four editors out.
Ooh.
So we have one editor all week, John Ashley.
Bless his heart.
For various reasons, some emergency, some planned, and it's just, it's one of those perfect storms.
Yeah.
Are people getting COVID out your way?
In this area, yeah.
Were they? Because, you know, a lot of people did over the last couple of months, but it seems to slow down a little bit, so I don't know. I got my, I even lost count. I think it's my sixth. I got the new vaccine.
So, yeah. Another one.
Holy cow.
Yesterday, I heard.
Did you get it?
I didn't get mine, but I heard there was another one made available, like appointments made available for new
getting
people
hers
yesterday.
As we speak right now.
I found it to be a piece of cake this time. How about you?
Didn't bother me. In fact, I was getting a little cocky, and I got COVID, flu, and Hep B. I got three shots and that. Boom, boom, boom.
And they didn't put you
on
your
the part. RSV?
Wow.
No, they Kaiser, our my local HMO, says we aren't going to offer it till the FDA approves it. It's been advertised like crazy.
Interesting.
I'm getting a little sick of these big pharmas advertising, driving demand. Shouldn't it come from the doctor to the patient, not the patient to the doctor?
Why is the government stepping in on that?
Well, they allow it now. I thought, I would have assumed that they wouldn't be advertising it if it's not approved. Oh, for individuals 60 or up, it's approved. And I have seen some people...
Aetna wouldn't pay for it for me.
Yeah, maybe that's what Kaiser's saying is we don't want to pay for it. Let's see what else. Adobe Express. What is Adobe Express?
Adobe Express is pretty much a hodgepodge of a graphical interface on the web where you can create graphics.
It's web-based Creative Cloud, kind of.
And you have a lot of different assets. I never know what the price is because I pay for all of it.
So you don't need it.
I don't know what the breakout is.
They're putting more AI into Express as well, generative fill. Which is the ability to take a picture and then expand the...
In painting.
Yeah.
Isn't that what it's called?
Outpainting. Yeah.
For
text to template, which is generating an image from a text prompt. And translate. For students, the new drawing and painting features are a game changer in bringing their ideas to life. Adobe showcased Adobe Gen Studio, a solution that brings the best of content ideation, creation, production, and activation together. Wow. I don't even... It sounds like Firefly is there throughout.
Not all Express is free, I thought, Scooter Ants. I thought you had to pay for having it on multiple devices to sync it up.
Adobe's going to add a digital nutrition label.
It's $9.99 premium option. Sorry. That's like, so I know you pay for something
free,
on it.
It's free, and then you get $90.99 for more.
For more options.
That's still... not bad. I was mad because I used to have the $10 a month photography subscription, which was Lightroom and Photoshop.
Yeah.
And then they took away Photoshop. It's like,
well, and then now the people that had that, because you only had X amount of cloud storage.
Right. They kept upselling me on that.
They've updated Lightroom to where you can utilize it for local storage as well.
Ah, that's better.
So you don't necessarily have to chew into your cloud storage.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
So
let's see what else. Photoshop on the web with Firefly powered generative fill and generative expand works on a Chromebook.
Chromebook, Mr. Jarvis.
Chromebook Plus.
It works. I played with it on a Chromebook, on a little cheap Chromebook that Queen Pruitt has.
Oh, I started talking about this nutrition label. They will automatically attach to Firefly outputs information like the creator's name, dates, edits made, and tools used. So, in effect, it's EXIF information.
Content Authenticity Initiative.
But it'll let you know who did this and what they did to it.
And they've also been working a lot with the open source community on that, too.
How hard will it be to remove those credentials, I wonder?
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, big week for Adobe. Does it go all week? Does it go through the end of the week?
Tomorrow is the last day. And today they're doing the Adobe Sneaks. Hopefully I can catch that in about 30 minutes from now so they can show off some of the things that they're working on and hope to put out next year. Adobe Sneaks is usually pretty good because you see a lot of fun stuff and sometimes you see some pretty controversial stuff in there too.
Some good stuff. Adobe's busy. You're our Adobe guru.
Oh, no. I'm thinking Mr. Nielsen is the guru.
He is pretty good.
That dude, I learned some stuff from him, man.
Yeah.
Wow, he's so good.
How about maybe this would be a good time for us to do our picks and wrap this
feller
up. I do want to promote Club Twit because tomorrow, if you're interested in AI, Jeff Jarvis, that guy over there, and Jason Howell will do another episode of AI Inside.
Woohoo!
Their new club-only show. And they'll be joined by Dan Patterson, you know, from Twit. Dan is now working to fight disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
New job. So they'll be talking, you guys will be talking about generative AI and disinformation. Yep.
Last week we had on my friend and student and colleague, Amy Reinhart from the Associated Press, talking about all that they are doing there with AI.
That's our AI Inside show. We're kind of workshopping it in the club tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, right after Home Theater Geeks records with Scott Wilkinson. In a couple of weeks after I get back from Rhode Island, I'm going to be doing the show from Mom's Basement next week. But when I get back, we'll do an escape room.
I'm looking forward to that.
Really should do the escape room in Mom's Basement because I don't. It'd be really, it might be spooky. Anyway, 3 p.m. Pacific, October 26th for the escape room. You're going to be here for that?
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Micah's going
to
do it. I'll do it.
It's me, you, Jason? Mr. Sargent, not Mr. Howell, Mr. Nielsen. Will
oh, and
be
Lisa's going to do it.
She's going to be here.
She has to do it.
She's going to be yelling at us.
She'll be the loud
us up.
One. She'll be the loud one. Yeah. Stacy's Book Club in November. These are all things we do as part of our club, which is a way we get you involved in helping us out. You've probably seen the articles. Podcast networks are folding. They're laying off. It's really been a tough time. This year has gotten worse and worse and worse. And I don't know why, because the economy's not getting worse and worse
exactly.
and worse. But advertisers, yep. I guess, have soured on podcasting or something. Anyway,
all kinds of things. Advertising in general, Leo. It's not-for-profit news outlets. The sponsorships are going down. It's the Washington Post has announced a big buyout. Advertising's down.
250 people. The Posts are letting them go.
Yeah.
So we would hope not to do that. We don't want to lay anybody off. We don't want to cancel any more shows. But, you know, I'm not Jeff Bezos. He could keep those people hired if he wanted to. I don't have that money. So if we don't make the revenue, we have more than $1 million a year payroll alone. And if we don't make that, we can't keep people hired. We can't generate new shows, and we want to do that. So we are working as hard as we're working our little tookuses off on ad sales.
Do the math. What does it cost to join the club?
Yeah, $7 a month.
$7.
So $7 a month times 12 into 1 million. Figure out how you help.
Yeah, that's you need. Yeah, we really would like to get. At this point, it is not covering the payroll, but we would like anything helps. Believe me, trust
it
me.
Does.
All you have to do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit. You get ad free versions of all the shows. I mean, literally. Ad-free. You don't even hear this. You also get all of the events that we do, all the shows we do in the club, mm-hmm. including Hands on Macintosh with Micah, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show, Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, and on and on and on. So I'm really trying to make sure that you feel like you're getting something for your $7.
Yep.
And honestly, I think we're giving you too much, but what can I say? So go right now, twit.tv/clubtwit. No, you're deserving. I don't want you to think I'm going to take anything away. twit.tv/clubtwit. $84 a year. There's family memberships
family
if
plans.
You want many people listening.
You can also do gifts because many of you listening to the show right now
are already members.
There, so
yeah.
Go ahead and set up a gift option too.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. I'll get one for Jake.
Yeah, in fact, a number. Dan Patterson.
I'm already a member.
He wanted to get a bunch of gifts for. It's kind
of
nice.
To do a bunch
Thank
of
you,
them.
Dan. Anyway, Ant's the community manager. I should let you talk about the club, but we really appreciate it. There's the
it's
Discord.
So
you get to participate
much
in that as well.
Fun.
It is, a
and
lot
I got
of fun.
To talk to John Scalzi last week. That was a club Twit exclusive,
and that's on the Twit Plus feed.
Twit
now.
Plus
so
feed.
You don't have to be here live for those things.
He was great. Oh, he was so funny.
Twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you for letting us interrupt your life with this plug. I'm not Mr. Promotional. I don't like doing this stuff, but. I do like doing the shows, and I want to keep doing them, and I want to keep Ant sitting next to me.
Amen to that.
I want to keep John at the board. I don't care if the AI can do it.
Just in case it can't, you got to cover your bases.
You never know. I'm not convinced. Anyway, thank you in advance. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kathy, do you have a pick, something you're happy about? You always got weird rock bands and weird stuff for
picks
us.
Are great.
Yes, well, I'm going to bristle at the contextualization of Huey Lewis in the news is weird, but...
there you go. You bristle at it.
Yeah, I consider me bristled.
I guess you're right. Huey Lewis in the news is not exactly jaw-dropping. All right.
But with that exception, it doesn't dawn on me to really think about things as favorite as opposed to interesting and sort of fascinating and something like that. So... at the end of September, I went back to Europe for the first time since COVID. And I went to France. I went to Paris for a day. And it was the first time I had seen I'm getting confused with the football team, but not
Notre Dame.
Yeah. It was the first time I'd seen it since the fire.
This broke my heart back in 2018. I remember seeing this and I called Lisa. I said, quick, turn on the TV. We love Notre Dame. We love the city of Paris. This was a heartbreaker. What was it like when you went there?
Well, so I was worried about it. Some back history is I had lived in Paris for a while, and the apartment I had was not far from it. It was just to the south a little bit, and I could actually see the spires from my kitchen window. So when it happened, it was, you know, even a little bit more personally devastating, even though I hadn't been there in years and years and years. But yeah, it was a big deal, and I was sort of dreading going to see it, but I sort of felt like I should because it was just significant in central Paris. And the way they're a couple years into the fixing of it, the reconstruction of it, and it's fascinating. So the Esplanade in front of it is open air. That's all cleaned up. The facade is cleaned up. They've actually got like some risers where you can just sort of sit on it and just kind of look at the church. And it's also got around the construction site, little placards that sort of explain what's going on, where they zoom in and they talk about the different craftsmanship, the different plans. Both, although not everything is translated into English, but some of about a third of it is translated, and then there's some extra French. And actually, if you keep scrolling down on this one, I think you'll see a sample of one of the pictures, something like that, where the pictures that I saw alongside where they showed the craftspeople doing the restorations, and you get a look at the artwork that was sitting up in the rafters.
Yeah,
and it's at a scale that's like human or give or take a little plus, a little minus. And the artistry is such that like showing these craftspeople restoring them is almost like watching a nurse care for her patient. There's this tenderness and you see these expressions on the artwork like they were sitting there waiting for somebody to come and clean up, because some of them hadn't been cleaned up in ages and ages and ages, like centuries maybe. And so I was going to this site that I was dreading, because I'm almost sensitive around ruins and stuff like that. It's an uncomfortable thing. And I ended up getting excited because this whole building was A, getting love, and B, it was fascinating about how they're talking about understanding the engineering and the artistry that had gone into its original creation and how they were mimicking it and how they were going to be true to the original. And there's going to be some modern stuff like they're going to have, I think, a sprinkler system and certain things like that. But
good. But
to the extent you don't want it to be intrusive. And so there's been a lot of very significant decisions about, what to do, even replicate the spire because the spire is not original. But they've made all these decisions, and just the engineering of it and the humanity and the fact that human beings could do this, that human beings could build it in the first place and then match the skills and have the technology and ability to do it again. I got excited in this kind of geeky way, the way I get excited when I watch like space movies, where there's something so exciting about what the human mind can do. And so I went from like the sense of dread to the sense of this is really cool and really exciting. And I took lots of pictures of the different signs that they had around explaining things. But the one that also did strike me is there were about four pictures I saw where they had the craftspeople doing the restoration of the human beings built into the art. And it was just such a striking dynamic of the way those, this one that we saw captures it a little bit, but some of the others you just see like a human being with like the Q-tip and, you know, their patient is just kind of sitting there patiently getting taken care of. And that just really struck at me. But yeah, just the engineering, and then we can do this. They built it in the first place and we can understand what they did, so we're able to replicate it. But they're going to be doing it in like 4 years, where the first thing took like 200 years to construct. So
that's awesome.
We've come a long way. But I just thought it was so interesting and I got excited about it. So in the department of favorite things that are interesting, I wanted to share that excitement.
Yeah, we have three links. One to a Magnum Photos photo essay, a 1 year in. There's a 60 Minutes piece, and then there's the official site itself on the restoration of Notre Dame. We'll put those in show notes. You know, Lisa and I are torn. We love Paris, and we were thinking maybe we should wait till it's done, but it sounds like it's worth seeing the process as it goes on.
I think so too. Like, it's something else to see. If there's anything the French are really good at, although apparently this may go back to Victor Hugo, because the Notre Dame apparently was falling into disrepair.
Oh, then the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
And then he wrote the Hunchback, but he had also apparently written a leaflet that the leaflet kind of called on France to sort of take care of its art better, because it talked about how, I think the line he had was, there's a building does two things. It provides a use to its owner and beauty to the people, or something
in
like that.
In 1832's War on the Demolishers, Hugo wrote, I'm reading from the parenthesis.
Okay. Wow, we've tied in.
Every day some old memory of France goes away with the stone on which it was written. Every day we break some letter of the venerable book of tradition. Wow. And so in Notre Dame de Paris, published in 1831 under the title that he preferred, Hugo placed the building and the book in opposition. The archdeacon silently gazed at the gigantic edifice, then with a sign stretching his right hands toward the printed book, which lay open on the table, and his left hand toward Notre Dame. With a melancholy glance from book to church, he said, "Alas, the one will kill the other."
Wow. It didn't. So if there's, thank goodness.
But he spawned with his writings the launching of like the department in France that takes care of its cultural icons.
He preserved the Gothic as an honorable thing.
And so if there's anything the French do well, it's museums and appreciation of these artistries and things that they have. So I'm sure there will still be some legacy discussing the rehabilitation, because it was so fascinating. But it is interesting to see the process and to see the new and the old, like, you know, new scaffolding adjacent to the old church with an elevator, which they didn't have before, and cranes, but it's still old and it's healing. And just if you have a sense of attachment to the place, watching it be healed there would be merit in seeing that, because it's more than just being ruined or done.
As much as I love Notre Dame and as many memories I have of visiting it over the years, I have to say Sainte-Chapelle is actually my favorite church. And it's not widely known because it's kind of hidden away inside some bureaucratic buildings, but it is an amazing, amazing cathedral, or chapel, I guess. It's not really a cathedral. But boy, if that were to burn, then I'd really be unhappy. I hope they do the same to preserve Sainte-Chapelle. Thank you, Kathy. It's always great to see you. Thank you so much for making some time for us. I know you've been on Zoom all day. So I appreciate your patience. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, a number?
Well, first, let me just also complete the reading from...
I thought you finished.
No, there's more. Hugo ended his story with the mob storming the cathedral. I quote, "Moreover, the vast edifice remains forever unfinished. The press, that gigantic machine which untiringly sucks up all the intellectual sap of society, unceasingly vomits forth fresh material for its work. All mankind are on the scaffolding. Every mind is a mason."
Oh, that's very apt, adjacent to the modern.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so we're going to stay in an artsy mode here. Very rare for me.
Yes.
So MoMA has just acquired a generative AI piece of work for its permanent collection called Unsupervised. And if you go to line 114, you can see its video.
Oh, I've seen videos of this. I can't wait to see this.
What? So it's in the permanent collection. And what this is The Gen AI used publicly available information from all of the collection of MoMA and then generated this.
So this is the whole collection, and kind of it looks now to people who aren't watching the video, it's one of those videos in, very popular in Tokyo that look like they're three-dimensional. They're not, but through a trick, through a little trompe l'oeil, if you will, they make it look like there's actually three-dimensional waves of color and texture. And that's AI generated, you're saying, from the works in the MoMA. That's
from the works in the MoMA.
That's wonderful.
Isn't it? I didn't realize that about it.
I have seen this before, but I did not know that. And it's permanent, so we can go see it.
So Rafiq Anadol from Rafiq Anadol Studio is who did it and announced on LinkedIn that it was just acquired for the permanent collection. So that was really nice.
Is it different all the time? It looks like it might.
I guess so. It's like
it might never repeat.
I mean, I'd like to see this on the Sphere in Las Vegas.
That would be a lot better.
I was going to say, I've seen stuff like this on the sides of casinos. It looks really, really cool.
Now, this, you know, looking at this video, this is one on YouTube. You can see the source material. It does look like paintings.
Right.
Very interesting. What a nice installation.
Yeah.
Unsupervised machine hallucinations permanent exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Hey, you haven't seen it personally.
Oh, class to end the show today.
Thank you. Thank you. Some shows end with booze.
MoMA.
Some shows end with class. Some shows end with extreme parkour and legged robots. You left that one out, Jeff. That would have been fun.
I didn't leave that up because I'm too classy to put it.
too classy for anything like this.
You're going to get all moral panicky, I know.
Aunt Pruitt, you're
picking. This is Carnegie Mellon with four-legged, that looks more like an insect than a dog.
I guess we'll get used to this, right? They'll just be all around.
Yeah,
we'll just get used to it.
At some point.
Yeah. It's not creepy at all.
No, it's not.
I got chased by a dog when I was riding my bike earlier this summer, and I'm having nightmares imagining getting chased by this.
A robotic dog.
This is going to win. I'll just tell you how the story ends.
Just have water.
I thought my heart was going to explode accelerating to get past that dog. So I don't know. Maybe this is better or worse. But
as long as you don't arm it, you're all right.
Well, if this doesn't have teeth, the other one did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. I would be less worried about this.
I just get this wet some kind of way.
You get it wet.
Be done.
What happens when your robot catches on fire? What would you do then? Now, that's, you ask the machine that. That's something I can identify with. Why, that's horrible. Ants, your pick of the week.
My pick is we have blog posts. So if you go to twit.tv and scroll down towards the about the lower third of the page below our
just wrote one.
We have blog posts out there from myself and
nice.
Our other host and our marketing
squad. Look at this.
So go check it out, twit.tv, blog posts right there.
It's like a little twit magazine. I didn't even know we were doing this.
Yeah, we started doing this a couple of weeks ago.
If you click blog in the header at twit.tv, that'll...
No. That's a different one.
Oh, jeez.
See, if you just scroll down.
Okay.
On the main page, you scroll down.
It's on the main page.
Yeah.
Oh.
Scroll down and you'll see latest posts right there. Right there. Right below our shows.
Oh, this is cool. And there's the John Scalzi interview and home theater geek Scott Wilkinson optimizing picture quality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right there below the shows.
Yeah. And even posts. It is in the menu, but I think it looks better down there.
Yeah, it does. This isn't as exciting. All right.
So, yeah, check that out on the main page there.
Nice.
And I wanted to share this because this is something for you on Football Sunday.
Is this about the blind side?
With Mrs. Laporte.
Yes.
So you won't be asking her 50 questions.
I do. But, you know, and I do it so she feels like, you know, she's smarter than me. So how to read a defense. Ooh, I like it.
This is such a really good video.
I like it.
For those of you that are interested about American football, this man jumps in
and shares
a lot of the X's and O's.
X's and O's.
He has a Florida State affiliation, but he does a good job just going over the basics of the defense and gives you good video and examples.
Florida State Seminoles.
But I thought it was funny when I came across it.
I will watch it. I need to learn. I do. Michael, when we were in Green Bay, bought a giant D and a fence piece.
Yes.
Defense.
Yes.
So I got to learn about. And the Niners have a very good defense.
They do. And so one of the three undefeated teams in the NFL at this moment.
Learn about them. Mr. Ant Pruitt is at antpruitt.com.
That's
his
right.
prints are there if you go to the print section. And he joins us every Wednesday for the show, plus doing all that hard work you do in the club.
Trying.
Tomorrow, the AI show with Jeff Jarvis and Jason Howell. Thank you, Ant.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. We'll look forward to seeing
you. Thank you.
Tomorrow. And again, next week, I'll be at Mom's house.
Sick of me yet?
Not yet.
But nearly.
Keep trying.
737 times, you kind of get
no,
there.
No, you haven't been on all 737 shows.
No, I have not.
No.
Most, though. I've
Most.
Been pretty good.
I think since pretty close to the beginning. Actually, I don't even know. Were you on the very first show?
Oh, yes.
I didn't
yes.
know Doc Searles was on this show. Did not know that.
In the beginning? In the early days? Yeah. Well, I tell you,
It was Gina and Leo and me in the beginning.
You were one of the creators.
Yes, I was. Because I wrote a book
August
called,
1st.
What Would Google Do?
That's right. Why didn't I remember that? This is back when it was audio only. August 1st, 2009, the first episode.
Same dumb theme song.
Was it?
This song
was
is
it?
Awesome.
I think so. I don't know.
This song is awesome. Is it? Is it?
He came to me.
Yeah. It is.
A few months ago and said.
Okay.
I love our song. It makes me smile okay. every time I hear it.
It was a mistake right. I made hungry. 14 years ago, and I'll never live it down. Kathy Gellis is at cgcouncil.com, cgcounsel.com. She's on Mastodon, Kathy Gellis, Kathy with a C, G-E-L-L-I-S. Thank you so much for being here, Kathy.
Always good to be here.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathy.
You can take the headphones off. Your long Zoom nightmare is over. Thank you. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do Twig every Wednesday. We're out about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You can watch us do it live at live.twit.tv. You can listen there, too. There's a live audio stream as well. If you're watching live, chat live in our IRC at irc.twit.tv. Of course, club members get to do that in our Club Twit Discord.
Woo-hoo.
But they never have to leave because the party never stops.
Never stops.
Club Twit Discord. After the fact, you can get shows at twit.tv/twig. That's the website. There's Jeff and Ant sitting right there. Look at that.
Wow. We look great.
Yeah. And I think that might be from Jason Howell's Pixel 8. I don't know.
We look damn good there.
You can also get it on YouTube. There's a This Week in Google channel on YouTube. And, of course, the best way to get it is subscribe on your favorite podcast player. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. And you can listen at your leisure. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We will see you next week. I'll be at Mom's. I think I got a good setup.
Yep.
I think it's going to look good.
It looked
we'll
good
see.
Last time.
Yeah. Well, this time I got a green screen, so I'm going to look like I'm trying to make it look like I'm here.
Oh boy.
I won't have.
Famous
how can I
last
do this
words.
Seat? I don't know.
Wait. Is this the house you grew up in?
No. Oh golly, no. But the house
I
grew up
for
in.
Leo's bedroom.
No, Alex Wilhelm's living there. I can't.
Oh, okay.
You know what? You know what? I could ask Alex if he'll let me do it from my old bedroom. That'd be hysterical.
That would be hysterical.
That would be fun.
Yeah, you go ask.
You got to get
I
your
cameras when
Sybil
you go
Shepherd
ask
poster up on the wall.
Yeah. Oh no, I was in college. That was well after college for Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't come up with a reference soon enough.
Yeah. I think it was more Howdy Doody for me. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week at Google. Bye bye.
See y'all.
Come join us on This Week in Enterprise. Tech expert Kos and I talk about the enterprise world, and we're joined by industry professionals and trailblazers like CEOs, CIOs, CTOs, CISOs, every acronym role, plus IT pros and marketeers. And we talk about technology, software plus services, security, you name it, everything under the sun. You know what? I learn something each and every week, and I bet you will too. So definitely join us. And of course, check out the twit.tv website and click on This Week in Enterprise Tech to subscribe today.